a world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 24th of September, year of our Lord, 2025. Well, it is on again, off again, turn around, spin around, and we never know from 1 hour to the next what Trump is going to do. Now he's done a complete spin around, and now he wants to pursue the war in Ukraine until the end. The end of what, you might ask? He thinks that Ukraine can win it, he says. Is it just bluster for negotiation? That's the way it's being explained by many of his diehard apologists. But is it also incredibly stupid and dangerous? That's what I think. We're going to talk about Trump's appearance at the UN. We'll be right back. Well, Trump went to the UN yesterday, and it began with an escalator that stopped as soon as he got on it. That was kind of the way that he kicked off his campaign. Roger Stone came up with that idea of Trump coming down the escalator. If only that had happened, what was 10 years ago?
Dana,
if only the escalator
just walked
had stopped
in.
10 years ago.
Right on time, I would say.
Yeah, here we are.
Right on cue.
Yeah, we got video footage of it here.
Love that punctuality.
Yes. And love the punctuality. Isn't that great? He's right on time. I wonder how he managed to get everything together in time.
I heard a few questions being shouted there.
Stop.
But no responses.
We're going to have to walk up. And so he had a problem with that. He had a problem with the teleprompter. And so his supporters, like Zero Hedge, are saying they tried to sabotage him.
Okay, I heard the end.
Reason. Poor thing. It's really tough. You know, while all that is breaking, other news that we're going to have today is how YouTube kicked off people like me because they didn't like our policies and you know what we were talking about. But it's all being laid at the feet of Biden. Nobody will criticize his majesty. This I got kicked off during Trump. I got kicked off again during Biden in May. I got kicked off of two financial platforms and YouTube when I had where I had a music channel. So it is not just about the people who talked about COVID getting kicked off. But anyway, let's go back to the UN.
Break in real fast. It just reminds me of that Mitch Hedberg joke. You know, I love escalators because you know escalators never broken. It just temporarily becomes stairs.
I was about to bring that up. Escalator temporarily stairs. We apologize for the convenience.
He had to take the stairs, and then when he started to make his speech, the teleprompter didn't work, so he had to actually like do a speech and think and talk, and maybe that's why some of this stuff came across as so strident and bullying. Except you know that's kind of his personality. So the only thing that was good about it, which in a sense, when I look at all the different things that Trump has done, especially in just the last couple of months, you know, hiding the Epstein files and taking all the hits to hide the Epstein files, the wars that he is trying to get us involved in. I mean, he's even trying to restart the Afghanistan war. And but he's trying to get us involved in wars in South America. He's trying to escalate the Ukraine war. He never tried to stop it. If he wanted to stop it, he could have stopped it immediately because he's the one giving all the weapons to Zelensky, giving him weapons and giving him money. If he wanted to stop it, he could have done it. You're not a Nobel Peace Prize negotiator if you're arming one side of the conflict. It's just absurd. But when you look at all the things that he's done, the attacks on free speech and everything else, supposedly in the memory of Charlie Kirk, who was pushing for free speech, trying to reestablish free speech in the university. So in his honor, you're going to censor people. It's just the most absurd thing. So when Trump comes out and starts lecturing the countries about how, you know, this global warming stuff is nonsense. You're destroying your own countries with the global warming and the climate change nonsense. as well as the immigration stuff. I look at it, and it's like, I almost wish he wasn't on my side on any issue, because it only poisons that issue in people's minds. Isn't that, it's like somebody who, you know, takes your side, and then all he does is scream at people and say stupid things about it. He doesn't explain why climate change is wrong. He just says it is, and he taunts people over it. So it's actually counterproductive for people on our side of the issues. After a moment of confusion, Melania quickly strode up the stalled steps, and Trump followed behind. And I guess that was the issue for him. Was an escalator that on the way up stopped right in the middle. If the First Lady wasn't in great shape, she would have fallen. But she's in great shape. Didn't say he was in great shape. There's two things I got from the UN, a bad escalator and a bad teleprompter.
I suppose that was just a lie too far, even yeah. for him. You know.
Yeah, so it was a blistering attack on the UN. So he attacked and criticized the UN. He attacked and criticized London Mayor Sadiq Khan. That's a target-rich environment right there. European countries who were abetting uncontrolled migration. He attacked Putin. He attacked countries that have recognized Palestinian statehood. Of course, he attacked Biden. Windmills, the climate change hoax, and took an anti-globalist position. He said, climate change is the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world. Again, it doesn't help our side for Trump to be taking our side and to not explain why it's a con job. And he says, you're destroying your countries and they're being destroyed. And he's gotten so deranged, I just hate for him to be on my side on any issue. Trump is now going into details, as they were blogging this on Zero Hedge, about the death and destruction in the Ukraine war, taking a swipe at Biden, saying it shows you what leadership is and what bad leadership can do to a country. And now he's going to follow the exact same policies. What did Biden do? He did sanctions against Russia, which is what Trump is boasting about. He's going to do really good sanctions, and it's really going to work this time. And so Biden did that, and he armed Ukraine. So Trump is going to do the same things that Biden did, and he expects different results. Don't tell me he's not crazy. That's a definition of crazy.
You know, it's not about what gets done. It's about who does it.
That's right.
When our guy does it, it's fine.
Yeah, it didn't work when Biden did it, but the same things will work when Trump does it.
Well, you see, when my president does it, it's not illegal.
Yeah, I tell you, he's looking for a distraction. You think that he wouldn't start a war to get off of this Epstein thing? Look at what Clinton did, right? Clinton got us involved in a war. But not as dangerous a war as this is going to be. It's absolutely insane. And he was really taunting Russia, calling them a paper tiger, saying, they're not a real military. If they were a real military, they could have finished us off in a week or so. You know, like we did in Afghanistan. 20 years we were there, we still lost. So it's Trump says, European nations must immediately cease all energy purchases from Russia. Otherwise, we're all wasting a lot of time. You know, that's we want to destroy Russia. Let's make it clear.
It'll also destroy Europe to do that as well.
That's right.
They physically cannot cut themselves off from this without endangering their own populations as we move towards winter.
Trump says the U.S. is fully prepared to impose, quote, a very strong round of powerful tariffs, which would stop the bloodshed, I believe, very quickly if Putin doesn't agree to end the war in Ukraine. That was all done by Biden. When Biden put sanctions on, it was a windfall profit for Putin. He cut the price and took payment in gold or Russian currency. And it was a $300 billion windfall for him. So Trump says that Europe is going to hell. That's his words. Goes scorched earth on the failing countries in the UN, blasting immigration, the world-ending nukes, and Sharia law in London. So it was just a gripe session that he had. Took aim at Sadiq Khan as a terrible mayor. He is. Said London was heading towards Sharia law. It is. He said, there's no more global warming, no more global cooling. Get away from the green scam or your countries will fail. He complained about renewable energy, calling it useless, warning that it was leading Europe to the brink of destruction. He said that he hectored Herr Starmer for 3 days that he was there every day, telling him, you've got to get away from this this green stuff. And I'm sure that's persuading everybody, don't you think? Trump slammed the UN for not helping me to stop conflicts. He's not trying to stop any conflicts. He falsely claimed that he had ended seven wars. I'd like to enumerate those. Can you think of any war that he has ended? I can't think of a single one. I can think of wars that he is eager to start. I mean, he even wants to go to war with Greenland and Canada when he began in Panama. What was the purpose of all that stuff? And he was being cagey about saying, yeah, we might use force against Canada. It was all to create chaos, confusion, disruption. It's just professional wrestling, and it's how he publicizes things. But he says it's time to end the failed experiment on open borders because your countries are going to side with Trump because he says the right thing for right now about climate change. He said the right thing about ending the war. Never believed he was going to do it. And, of course, he's added a lot of other wars he'd never talked about. We've got people so angry at the United States and Canada and the tariffs and retaliation for what he's done that it's affecting Florida orange juice sales. That's what this guy has done. He's created conflict where there was none. Everybody was very happy about the fact that the U.S. and Canada had the longest unpatrolled border. So you get this Trump shill, Jack Posobiec, go up to the border. Look at this. This town, there's no fence. You know, there's no guard dogs, there's no guard towers, people with machine guns. We got to fix this. What's the matter with these people? I know exactly where Jack Posobiec is coming from, and I know where Trump is coming from. I know who they work for. You can see it in the agenda. You don't need specific names. And so you better believe that I don't support Trump. That's the issue that I got with Charlie Kirk. I know that Trump knew what he was doing. I don't think he's that stupid. And I know that Charlie Kirk is not that stupid. Why would Charlie Kirk try to get him in office again? Try to explain away all of the faults instead of trying to correct them if he's got any influence with Trump. That's what I don't get about it. Somebody said, you don't like Charlie Kirk because he supported Trump. You're right. That's the issue I've got with him. I also saw him sell out the family and Christ when he used a black guy is homosexual. We've got the culture war that we're doing, right? And he has this young black guy, a homosexual, there. And behind him, he's got the big thing that says culture war. And so there were some people from Nick Fuentes' group that said, exactly how does that help us when the big tent partisan politics, folks? There's no principles involved in that. It disgusts me. Reports in the Norwegian press claim that Trump cold called the country's finance minister to discuss the peace prize. He should get a peace prize, evidently, because he's raising tariffs on everybody. I think he always spells peace with an I. That's what he wants. And so he's had Pakistan, Israel, Cambodia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Rwanda, and Gabon have said he should get the peace prize. Is there any real country that is saying this? No.
Yeah. Is there a country that we can't immediately break in 5 minutes with some economic policy we put in place?
That's right. Yeah. What about Ukraine, Russia, Venezuela, all these different things, and other countries that he has threatened and harmed who have not done anything? So that is his. He really wants that for some reason. I think they should come up with a new prize. I think they should have the Ig Nobel Peace Prize, because he is ignoble. He is not noble. The New York police stopped Emmanuel Macron. He was walking down the sidewalk, and they wouldn't let him get across because Trump's entourage was coming through. You know how that works. Whenever they come to town, it's total chaos, and they stop everything in every direction. And he was a bit incensed, as you can imagine, Macron. And so he has Trump's number on his phone, and it was all in French, so he didn't play the video. But he calls up Trump, and he says, they won't let me get across the road because they're blocking it for you. And he says, if you can't see it, he said, let me pass, and I'll negotiate with you, he says to the police. Because if you can't see the entourage coming, if it's that far away, just let me pass. I will negotiate with you. I guess that's the way that he talks when he's at these meetings here. But he calls up Trump and he says, so, how are you? Guess what? I am waiting in the street because everything is closed down for you, he says.
Welcome to America.
That's right, yeah. Welcome to New York. By the time that place is always gridlock, it seems like, every time I go up there. Remember that?
Yeah. The last time we were there, it was No, last time we were there for work, mm-hmm. we got stuck in traffic for 3 hours plus trying to get out of, was it the Holland Tunnel, I want to say it was?
Yeah, oh, that was awful.
Absolutely nightmarish.
And, you know, you can't go anywhere to use the restroom even, you know, I mean, you're stuck there. But it was also, we were there to report on something that's happening at the UN.
Yeah, the UN Arms Trade Treaty.
Yeah, the Arms Trade Treaty. And it was total gridlock around there. But then it got really bad when we tried to get out in the Holland Tunnel. Oh, it's just crazy. Well,
you want to play the video in this article.
What's that?
There's a video of Macron.
Yeah, it's just all in French, so we have no idea.
Oh, oui, baguette.
That's right. You want to get the comments?
We've got DG8. Thank you very much, DG8. Really do appreciate it. It says, David, we are in dangerous grounds. The merger of government and religion is very dangerous. The new TPUSA tour is loaded with Hindus, Mormons, Jews, and Catholics. TPUSA was a Christian organization.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. I read that observation from a guy who was in the UK, and he says in the UK, they won't even talk about God. They won't mention Christ except as a swear word, right? And he was so excited to hear politicians saying that. And I guess that's my problem with it, is because I know these politicians. He doesn't, because he's in the UK. So he doesn't know what these guys are about. When you see people like Rubio and others and the things that they have said, the things that they have done, to me, yes, God can use anybody. You know, as one pastor said, you know, God spoke to Balaam through his ass, his donkey. And he says, and he's used many an ass since then. And so God can use that when somebody says something. And maybe there's somebody who's really not political, hasn't been paying attention to who these guys are. And so that hypocrisy of them and their personal life doesn't get in the way of the message. I look at it, and to me, it's like some guy that's been caught red-handed in a whorehouse, the pastor. And then he shows up on Sunday morning and he's going to preach. It's just, you can't get past that hypocrisy. And that's the way it is with these politicians. You know, so I look at it. That's why I said, I guess I'm just too critical. But I thought more about it. And I thought, that's why I'm critical about this. I can't get past this hypocrisy. I know what these guys have done. You know, it's like, you know, when I look at these Christian news sites, it's mostly, well, this celebrity said nice things about Jesus, and so we're going to platform him for this, and you know, you should investigate this because this celebrity likes Jesus. And then next to that are more articles about how some high profile pastor has been caught in some sexual abuse thing or something. It's just those two things all the time, and there's just this cognitive dissonance when that happens. And many times in some denominations, what was the guy that just I have sinned, the guy that became a soundbite. What was his name?
I can't remember.
Anyway, you know, you got somebody like that, and some of these denominations, they get caught multiple times at whorehouses, and they just come back, and the people just keep following them. And that's what I see happening with politics and religion in the GOP. I can't go there. It just bothers me. That hypocrisy, that rank hypocrisy, just gets in the way of the message so much I can't hear the message anymore. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are like that about this. Sorry, yeah. Travis, go ahead.
MegaNick117, thank you very much. You need to scroll that down. It says, Islam is an antichrist religion. Well, every other religion is an antichrist religion.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah, I've told the story before. We went to, we were in Vegas, and we went to hear Penn and Teller, and Penn Jillette said, I don't use the F word. He says, everybody uses the F word for every type of speech. They use it as a noun, as an adjective, as an adverb, and all this other stuff. And he says, I try not to do that because I try to have a good vocabulary. He said, I think that's a crutch. People use that and they don't have a vocabulary to express themselves. He goes, but I deliberately work to blaspheme the name of Jesus Christ. And that's exactly the way these people are. You know, it's just, it's deliberate. And it's across the board. I had, we had friends, his wife had grown up in Japan. And she said, it's funny because all the people there are, let's see, what is it?
Shintoism, yeah, I believe.
But she said, you know, they're not Christian. very, very tiny Christian population that's there. But she said everybody there is swearing using the name of Jesus. But there's other ways we can take Jesus' name in vain. And that's some of what we saw with some of these politicians taking his name in vain.
We've got Big Brit is back again. Some idiots were saying stopping the escalator might have killed Trump.
Oh, we can only hope.
Do they mean, you know, having to walk?
This is a guy who's been escalating every conflict he can think of across the world. So it is fitting that they would try to stop the escalator. He is the escalator.
Do they realize,
I am the escalator.
Do they realize that escalators are dangerous when they're moving? Stopped escalator is no threat.
It's just the stairs.
It's, you know, when it's moving that you could theoretically be injured by it.
Oh no, it's stairs.
Back in the 60s, my dad had an out-of-town client who came in. And he had never been to the big city, so to speak, as Tampa. Tampa's not a big city in the 1960s. And he took him someplace they went, and they had an escalator. And the guy was absolutely flummoxed and scared to death about how to get on this thing. When he got on it, he squatted down, hanging on the two sides, you know, got down really low. And everybody was looking. Anyway, you had to be there, I guess.
What's going on? The floor, it moves. Denver, Attaway, Trump's own White House was controlling a teleprompter, just as is the case with the other heads of state that speak at the General Assembly.
Hmm. Yeah.
B.L. Houghton, war is just peace through strength, LOL. Bulldog, peace through UN climate lockdowns.
Yeah.
Francine, climate change, we used to call that seasons. Not anymore. You can only have this rhetoric back and forth. Man, I remember when the seasons were stable and it's gotten so much warmer. It hasn't.
I've used that as an example, just try to break through the groupthink of people. I said, you know, think about the profound effect that the sun has on our climate, right? We have just a little bit of the seasons are caused because we have the tilt, and then that little bit of change and distance from the sun causes us to have these major seasonal changes. So that is the driving force behind everything. We still have seasons, even if they think that there's some kind of global warming greenhouse effect going on. We still have seasons. That means the predominant influence on our climate is obviously the sun. You can't get these people to even think that is correct. And when I said that, people attacked me for saying that. I mean, it's just, that's how far gone this country is. It's useless. It's hopeless. It really is.
DG8, thank you again. David, as long as Trump is in power, government tyranny will reign, no discernment. Question nothing. Trust this government. Yeah. People will blindly defend their choice of the less executive orders, and three quarters are technocracy tyranny.
That's right.
Bulldog, AI is chastising me for using the term climate lockdown as being a conspiracy. Ah, yes. The lockdowns were a conspiracy.
My first, when I first got ChatGPT, I interacted with a few things about climate and about COVID. And of course, it's going to toe the party line. And so I said, this thing is useless. And it's rigged because there's no logic behind any of these MacGuffins.
DG8, thank you again. I try to warn people about AIPAC. They will defend it to their last breath. I ask them, why would Trump take $250 million from them when they fund Pelosi, Nadler, Schiff, Waters, and Hakeem Jeffries?
Yeah. Yeah. Israel is the closest thing we've had to bipartisan politics here in this country.
Yeah, unfortunately. Apparently. All it takes to build a coalition of the willing is a massive war chest.
It's one bird and there's two wings to it. That's what's going on in this country.
DG8 says, David noticed Trump advance kept pointing out Charlie Kirk's God. Do they worship a different God?
I didn't notice that. I couldn't bring myself to actually watch it or even any clips of it. Like I said before, the hypocrisy makes me want to puke.
Star Barkley says, war is peace. And Three Little Birds says, they murdered Kirk so the indoctrination of our college kids can continue unfettered.
Yeah, they won't talk about, you know, Kirk talked about how the colleges were the problem. He was going to go there and talk to them. Nobody wants to talk about getting rid of the colleges. Nobody wants to talk about, you know, if they want to have colleges, fine. Let the students pay for it. Let it be with tuition. You know, one of the reasons why tuition is so expensive is because it was so heavily subsidized by the government. Whenever you subsidize something, it gets more expensive. Why do you think they subsidize it so heavily? Why do you think that they won't do anything about it? They love to have these problems that are being generated by these institutions. It gives them an excuse, gets everybody riled up so that they think that if they vote for their candidate, he's going to fix this stuff. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Trump's AI bioweapon that he wants to do out there. He loves bioweapons. He loves mRNA. He loves AI, and he just keeps coming back to these themes over and over again. We'll be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Well, Lance had an interesting insight here when we took a break. Tell the people what you just told me.
Just about the Trump on the escalator story. I thought it was amusing. The first ever escalator was an amusement park ride that just went up a few stairs to a little platform, then you walked down regular stairs on the other end.
Remember, as I've said before, Italy had a civil war at exactly the same time we did, 1861 to 65. It was not over slavery. It was over the fourth turning of the Industrial Revolution and the creation of the nation state. Prior to that, power was distributed, and you had different centers. And so it was very easy to put it, the high tariffs that he enacted forced other countries to renegotiate trade agreements with the United States. He called the practice a defense mechanism, and said it can be a model for more effective diplomacy around the world. It is a defense model in the same way that we had the Defense Department, which he now has appropriately renamed the Department of War. It is a war mechanism. That's what sanctions are. Much of Trump's speech touted his actions and his policies independent of the UN. And just remember, back in the first term of Trump, he threw out some red meat to his base saying, I think we'll get out of the UN because conservatives and, you know, mainstream America doesn't like the UN, never wanted to be in the UN. But of course, that red meat was nothing but an illusionary nothing burger, as it typically is. You couldn't even make a Trump taco out of it. So his administration is launching an international effort to stop countries from conducting bioweapon research, which he characterized as a growing danger after the COVID-19 pandemic. No, it was his jab. He's the father of the bioweapon, is what we should call him. Also, to pioneer AI's verification system as part of the effort. This is all about creating an overlord AI system, and to the extent that he combines it. Remember, the very first thing he did was to have an event with Larry Ellison, and to say that they wanted to have AI design, custom genetic, custom to your genes, mRNA. His injection has always been a genetic injection, and they admit as much. And now they're telling us, oh, yes, mRNA can modify DNA. And of course, there's a lot of garbage and DNA in the injections to boot. But it was pretty obvious from the very beginning. I said, if you just think about this, if the mRNA, they tell us, it doesn't change the DNA, it copies the DNA. Well, what if it doesn't copy it exactly right? Well, then it's going to change it, isn't it? It was just very simple to understand that that could happen even accidentally, but that it could also happen deliberately was shown in the summer of 2020 as they were rushing through all this stuff before it was deployed by Trump and was still in the development stage. I reported that Thomas Jefferson University did some experiments with mRNA, and they said, look, we can use it to change your DNA. So I said, that's it, folks. Nobody wanted to report that. That story was spiked right away. Nobody wanted to talk about that, but that is the reality. And when you look at Susan Monterez, who was put in at the CDC, and I don't know if she was taken out because of this, if the good guys won, I don't know if there's any good guys in there, or if it was just a personality conflict between her and RFK Jr. But I know that whoever got her put in that position in the Trump administration put her in there because she was part of BARDA, the biological equivalent of DARPA, also ARPA-H. And so both of those things are horrific in terms of the way they're weaponizing technology against us in a way that is medical. And her focus was on the same thing that Trump's focus on his first day was, and that is a combination of AI and mRNA. So it raises a lot of red flags with me to see Trump talking about AI and bioweapons yet again, because the mRNA is the bioweapon. It wasn't something that came out of a lab. The COVID pandemic was not something that was weaponized as gain of function. But you notice that even though they want to promote that narrative to cover up what they did with the vaccine deliberately, they will not stop the gain of function. And he's not even saying we need to have a treaty that is going to stop this. He says, oh, we'll police it with AI. This will be an excuse, a use case for AI to make sure they can put AI everywhere. He's doing this for his technocracy buddies who are controlling. He does things for Israel, and he does things for the technocracy. And both Israel and the technocracy are doing everything they can contrary to our interests, but they completely own him. So his administration is launching an international effort to stop countries from conducting bioweapon research. Of course, he won't lead the way and stop it here. Also to pioneer an AI verification system as part of the effort. We'll wait and see just how this is going to be imposed on people. In February, America sided with Russia and China on a resolution that called for an end to the Russian-Ukraine war. Except now he has flipped on that as well. Trump pulls a jaw-dropping 180, ruthlessly mocking Russia as a paper tiger. Trump made a shocking announcement about his administration's new approach to Ukraine. Just like that, he changes, right? Turns on a dime. Why? Because he is rudderless. He has no principles. He has nothing to steer him whatsoever. So he's just a ship blown about by every change and whim. Trump declared that he is now willing to back the Ukraine until it recovers all the territory taken by the Russians. So he thinks that they can get everything back from the Russians. They can win the war, quote unquote. What does that mean to win a war like that? I think you win a war like that by stopping it. That's the most successful thing that you can do. He says, quote, after getting to know and fully understanding the Ukraine-Russian military and economic situation. Oh, so does he admit that he was just spouting his mouth off without any understanding of the situation when he said he was going to end it in 24 hours? And after seeing the economic trouble that is causing Russia, I think Ukraine, with the support of the European Union, is in a position to fight and win all of Ukraine back in its original form. With time, patience, and the financial support of Europe, and in particular NATO, no, of the American taxpayers who will be made bigger debt slaves for this war to kill people.
Also, who will be left to occupy this territory at that point?
Yeah, there won't be any Ukrainians left. It's crazy. The original borders from where this war started is very much an option. And why not? Russia has been fighting aimlessly for 3.5 years, a war that should have taken a real military power less than a week to win, taunts Trump. This is not distinguishing Russia. Well, what about our war in Iraq and Afghanistan and many other places? Since World War II, we have fought one asymmetric war after the other, and the best that we've been able to manage is a stalemate in Korea. In fact, it's very much making them look like a paper tiger, he said. When the people living in Moscow and all the great cities, towns, districts all throughout Russia find out what is really going on with this war, the fact that it's almost impossible for them to get gasoline through the long lines that are being formed, and all the other things that are taking place in their war economy, where most of their money is being spent on fighting Ukraine, which has great spirit and is only getting better, Ukraine would be able to take back their country in its original form. Who knows? Maybe even go further than that. Which we know has always been the goal of NATO, to overthrow Russia. NATO has been the aggressor in this, folks, for decades. So going back to the 90s, Putin and Russia are in big economic trouble. And this is the time for Ukraine to act. I wish both countries well. We will continue to supply weapons to NATO for NATO to do what they want with them. Good luck to all. Yeah. And go knock yourself out. Let's have a war. It was just in February. Here we are now in September, that he and Vance blew up at Zelensky in the Oval Office. But now he's become full Lindsey Graham on this thing. And is absolutely insane. From the very beginning, everybody said there is absolutely no way that Ukraine can win this war with Russia unless America enters it along with, and you don't even have to have Europe, but we're going to have a war between us and Russia. That's what Trump wants.
Good luck to all. It's such an utterly insane thing to say about
a non sequitur, yeah.
About a war.
It's, yeah.
It's not a baseball game. You know, this isn't, oh, I just hope both sides have a good time.
Oh, it is for him. It is for him. He thinks that he won't be touched by this. And he probably won't. He's got his little bunkers no matter what happens. He's got his bunkers to hide in. But it'll be our war. Rich man's war, poor man's fight. As I said before, and I said it again on Twitter in response to him saying this stuff. War is when they tell you who to fight. Revolution is when you figure out who the real enemy is. In a major shift, Trump says he now thinks Ukraine can win back all the territory taken by Russia. What an incredibly stupid and dangerous man he is. He despises this country. He puts this country last. Our interests are behind all of these corporate interests and donors and bribers who are showering him with cash, whether it's a foreign country or whether it's an industry group or a particular person. They all come first. Our concerns are none of his concern. It's a big shift. This post of Trump that I just read to you is a big shift. And Zelensky says that it is very positive, he thinks. Zelensky added that he believes that Trump understands for today that we can't just swap territories. It's not fair, he says. Yeah, it's not fair. I need to have my territory. I want my NATO membership, and I don't care how many Ukrainians I have to kill to get it, says the leader of Ukraine. And the same thing is true in every country. Putin doesn't care about Russians. Trump doesn't care about Americans. Zelensky doesn't care about Ukrainians. Fred Mertz doesn't care about the Germans. Macron doesn't care about the French. And Herr Starmer doesn't care about the Brits. They all hate us. They're all looking for ways to kill us. That's the reality of this. The goal of Trump's social media posts and subsequent comments to reporters about it was to exert maximum public pressure on Russia to get them to the table for a deal. Oh, yeah. He has been so effective at negotiation, hasn't he, with this abrasive bullying tone that he takes with everybody. So he's going to mock Russia and say, yeah, a real country would have won this war by now. We'll see how long this thing drags on once Trump gets involved in it. Trump was not able in 4 years to conclude successfully the war in Afghanistan. He made no attempt to leave. The thing came crashing down in a kind of Saigon evacuation under Biden, which, again, is Biden's fault. But Trump didn't do anything to end that war that he promised to do for 4 years. And he's not going to do anything to end Ukraine. The military-industrial complex that he's so beholden to doesn't want it to end. Macron applauded Trump's statement. I think he is very, very right on this one. Yeah, right. Because they all want war. All the Europeans want war. If we back completely Ukraine in this situation, given the Russian economy is suffering, there's an opportunity of a good future, Macron told Trump. Right. Trump then added, I really do feel that way. Let's get them their land back. If you're going to do that and you're going to take some of the Russian land, it is absolutely insane. Lindsey Graham, who last month said that Russia and Ukraine would have to swap some territory to end the war, is now elated. Now, instead of having to make concessions to end the war, the guy who has been saying, we're going to go into Russia, we're going to get Putin. Remember that? I've played that clip many times. He and John McCain went to Ukraine several years ago, well before Russia invaded, and said to the Ukrainians, all right now you're fighting your fellow Ukrainians. We're going to go into Russia, and we're going to get Putin. That's what you guys are going to do. And they pan the camera around, and the people are like deadpan. It's like, seriously? And that's what they're doing. But now Graham is excited. I mean, he'd come around even to this, saying they're going to have to give up some stuff. So I wonder, what is in this for Trump? I mean, somebody must have either threatened him or paid him off big money to get him to flip like he did. Trump also conveyed to the press that there doesn't appear to be an end in sight for the conflict. Looks like it's not going to end for a long time, because that's what we want. We want endless wars. That's what we've always had. This is the guy who keeps bragging about how he deserves a peace prize. I'd like to give him a peace. Trump has repeatedly said that exchanging territory between Ukraine and Russia would be a key element of any solution to end the war. So, again, paper tiger, and we're going to get all their land back, plus some from Russia. And Trump stunned people when he was asked if NATO should shoot down Russian planes. Zelensky was asked by MSNBC anchor Katie Turr, I do want to play something he just said to reporters as he was meeting. I'm sorry, it wasn't asked to Zelensky. This was MSNBC playing this. Somebody asked him, do you think that the NATO countries would shoot down Russian aircraft if they enter their airspace? Yes, I do, said Trump. That was quick. Help me to understand the president's position right now on Russia, she said. And Von Hilliard was also there. He said, it's a heck of a statement coming from this president of the U.S. in this situation where Article 5 were to be invoked by NATO allies, there is a question of whether the U.S. under this Trump administration would be committed to defending countries that could face incursions from Russia. And what we have seen over the course of the last 2 weeks are that Romania, Poland, and Estonia all reporting jets, drones, and Russian aircraft entering their airspace, Hilliard said. Well, again, this is the narrative that Poland has been pushing very hard. And as we pointed out, these were drones that we've had this situation before where Ukraine uses electronic jamming on these drones. These drones are not armed. They were decoy drones for the ones that were armed and did have electronic countermeasures. So these are the low echelon drones that are just out there as decoys. They got jammed. They went over the border, ran until they fell. The only damage that they could find was a house, they said, was hit by a drone, except that the Polish military and Donald Tusk, the Polish prime minister, knew before they put out the story that it was actually their own missile, a dud, that was fired from an F-15 that hit that house. It was not a drone. And they knew that before they put out the report saying that it was a drone. What they were trying to do was to get the president, who is part of the opposition party, and the president of Poland was not on board with a war with Russia, like Donald Tusk, who is an EU globalist. So they were trying to gaslight him and the entire world by thinking that there had been, trying to make the case there had been an attack. It was nothing of the sort. It was all a false flag narrative. It was all lies, and these people continued to try to drag us into World War III. That's what this is about. And now Trump is fully on board as well. Because like Donald Tusk, Donald Trump is also a globalist. People just haven't figured that out in the United States yet. Nothing could be clearer to me than that this guy is playing for that team. He's not America first. He's America last. Israel first, The globalist agenda next and America last. That's where Trump is. For the fourth time this year, he's allowed a deadline to come and go after welcoming Putin onto U.S. soil. The president was just asked, at what point will he stop trusting Putin? And he said he'd give him about another month. Well, I think that that time frame has already left, I think. Ukraine, says Rubio, has to agree to a peace deal. He's saying this as Trump is trying to escalate everything. So, again, are they playing good cop, bad cop? I think this is a very stupid and dangerous game. Rubio said it's not up to us to win the war. He said, when asked why the conflict continues despite Trump's repeated promises to end it on day one of his new administration. Yeah, those are just things that he said to get people to vote for him. He never had any ability to do that. We always knew that. He never had any intention even of trying to do that. We always knew that as well. It's just things that he tells his base. And they believe him. And then they defend him when it doesn't happen. The Russians have to stop the war, said Rubio, and the Ukrainians have to agree to a peace deal. The Secretary of State of the U.S. would retain the role of a broker in the conflict for as long as possible. We are not an honest, neutral third party when we are arming one side of the conflict and threatening the other side. The only way that the U.S. is going to be broker is with a amount of money that Trump is giving these people. That makes us all broker than we were before.
There's also the fact that Zelensky is never, ever going to agree to a peace deal.
No.
The corruption he's engaged in and he's been able to get away with is solely because of the fog of war. Because
that's right. That's why he wants to keep this war going.
Yeah, because there's thousands upon thousands of Ukrainians dying. No one has the time to really sit there and prosecute him for what's going on. The second that ends, the second there's a ceasefire and people look at what he's done,
I think the most interesting character in Ukraine is this guy, Alexei Arestovich, because he's kind of like Dave Chappelle says Trump was. He says he'll come out and he'll tell you these guys are a bunch of criminals, and he'll go right back in and join them. And that's the way that Arestovich was in the Zelensky administration. Remember, they got elected in 2019. It had already been 5 years of civil war where they were bombing these people in let's see, is it Eastern Ukraine or Western Ukraine? Eastern Ukraine, yeah. And so they've been bombing the people who wanted to remain with Russia. And so Zelensky put together a team for peace talks because he had run on that platform just like Trump did. But he had no intention of doing it. And so Arestovich was the guy who was the lead negotiator in that. And when he comes back and he talks to Ukrainian TV, they said, what are the chances of peace? He goes, none. They said, oh, that's horrible. He goes, no, it gets worse in 3 years. And it was 2019 when he said it, and it was 2022 when Russia did it. He said, we're going to be at full war with Russia. And he said, and she said, oh, that's really horrible. He goes, the country will be devastated, destroyed. But, he said, the good news is we're going to get into NATO. And the reporter really was not too impressed with that. He got kicked out of the Zelensky administration when, during the war, you had a Russian cruise missile that hit a residential high-rise that was there and hurt a lot of people. And Zelensky wanted to make that, he wanted to blame Russia for that, saying they deliberately targeted it rather than it's something that happened in the fog of war. Arestovich came out and said, actually, what happened was we shot that cruise missile. It went off course and hit the apartment building. And then he was fired. Now he is running against Zelensky for president. And if he doesn't get killed,
I was going to say that's
he'll have some
position.
Interesting things to say. Yeah, he's already said some interesting things. He said that he told everybody, he said, Ukraine is going to be destroyed. He said it again. If we continue down this path, he said, the only way forward for Ukraine to continue to exist as individuals and even as a country is for us to have a negotiated settlement and then to put ourselves in a position of like intermediary of trade between Europe and Russia. He said, that's a role that we could fulfill that would work for us. But he goes, there is no other role that we can have. So he's still telling people the truth. But people don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the truth in Ukraine. They don't want to hear the truth in the U.S. either. So the German army is revealing what their expected losses will be from a conflict with Russia. The German army apparently disagrees with Trump that the Russian army is a paper tiger. They said to expect to suffer 1,000 wounded soldiers a day in the event of a conflict with Russia. Realistically, said the Surgeon General, Ralph Hoffman, told Reuters on Monday, he said, realistically, we're talking about a figure of around 1,000 wounded troops per day when asked about the potential casualty rate. But, of course, this is a price that they're willing for other people to pay, isn't it? You know, the Germans don't care. The German government doesn't care about Germans. The Ukrainian government doesn't care about Ukrainians. The Russian government doesn't care about Russians. The American government doesn't care about Americans. This is where we see it everywhere. So, yeah, okay, 1,000 people wounded today. How many killed? Earlier this year, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov warned that Germany is becoming dangerous again. Yes. Fred Mertz, had earlier vowed to make the Bundeswehr the strongest conventional army in Europe. He also labeled Putin as perhaps the most serious war criminal of our time. Well, that's the title that Trump is in competition for. I mean, he's out there blowing up ships left and right. As a matter of fact, I didn't play this, but I'll play it for you. This is the latest murder on the high sea from Donald Trump. You know, what do you say about somebody who destroys boats and kills everybody on board without warning, without legal justification? They are war criminals. By the way, I've talked about what Duterte did as president of the Philippines. You know that he's now, I just saw yesterday, he is under arrest in, at the International Criminal Court for the extrajudicial killings that he did as part of his war on drugs. And it is no different in principle than what Trump is doing with this. He killed about 12,000 people, but they're not even coming after him for that. They've got him at the International Criminal Court. He's turned 80, and he's under arrest. He left as president in 2022, I believe, and then they arrested him. And same fate could be there for Donald Trump. I think that it just skipped the impeachment this time and have some international people arrest him after he leaves office. That'd be a better solution. Something's going to happen somewhere. U.S. officials say that regime change in Venezuela is the real goal of military action in the Caribbean. We don't know what their real goal is because they just won't discuss this. They're going to do whatever they wish, whatever they decide in secret. They will not involve the American people. They won't even involve Congress in this. U.S. officials have told the New York Times that the real goal of the U.S. military buildup in the Caribbean and the bombing of the boats in the region is regime change in Venezuela. Well, it might be the oil, right? But what we know is it's not fentanyl. That's yet another Trump lie. The policy is largely driven by Marco Rubio. Back in 2019, the first Trump administration attempted to back a coup against Maduro. Rubio posted a photo on Twitter of former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, the moment he was being brutally murdered in an apparent threat to the Venezuelan leader. The Trump administration claims that Maduro is the leader of a drug cartel, but has not produced any evidence for the charge. As a matter of fact, there have been analysts within the Trump administration that says that that's not the case. Trump has also framed the military campaign in the region as a response to overdose deaths in the U.S., due to fentanyl. But fentanyl is not produced in Venezuela, and it does not go through the country on its way to the U.S. Well, that didn't stop him from making the same charge against Canada. He will tell any lie that he feels is necessary in order to declare an emergency and act like a dictator.
We got fentanyl to the north and fentanyl to the south. Looks like we're fenced in.
Yeah, we're fentanyl fenced. So the real goal is to drive Mr. Maduro from power. I think the real goal is to take the oil. Driving him from power is a means to that end. And all the talk about the war on drugs is just a head fake and a prevarication to try to act as a justification here. U.S. officials have said the Trump administration is considering direct strikes on Venezuelan territory. Of course, that's why they're there with the big armada, which could lead to a full-blown war with the country. But, of course, it could also lead to a full-blown war with Russia and China, which Trump doesn't care about. Maybe that's why he turned 180 because he knows he's going to be at war with Russia and China anyway. So is he any different from Putin? I mean, if Trump is going to invade Venezuela to take their oil, does he have more or less justification than Putin did to go into Ukraine? I think Putin had, I'm not saying he was justified in doing it, but I think you could make a better case that what he did was more justified than what Trump is doing. After all, Ukraine would not allow the Russian-speaking, Russian-culturally linked areas to have their own self-governance and to remain with Russia. That was a core part of that. And Ukraine had been part, and the Crimea especially, had been a part of Russia for 400 years. Venezuela was never a part of America, and you can't make any humanitarian case whatsoever that we should invade Venezuela to stop something that is going on there. It is nothing other than political geopolitics and oil, which is why they're going into that area. Comments.
Got a lot of comments. Big Brit is back again. They were saying if he was on a moving escalator, a sudden stop could have made him fall backwards. Idiotic. I know that.
Well, if you look in that picture, he was about to get on the escalator when it stopped. I mean, maybe he was on the first step, but he wasn't in the middle of the escalator anyway. I mean, they're at the bottom of it.
Truly a terrifying prospect to consider. What if the escalator all of a sudden stops at its blistering pace? You might be thrown around. A Syrian girl? Yeah, Trump. So.
Because it could, even though Netanyahu's party kept coming out on top, they couldn't put together a coalition and they didn't have enough votes to form a government. So they did like 3 times in a row. And so to pull everybody together, you have the war, the false flag attack. Go ahead.
We have Audi MRR. Trump is all in with the Ukraine nonsense just as much as his predecessor.
That's right. That's right.
KWD68, MAGA will cheer as they're marched into Trump's freedom cities. Well, it's got freedom in the name. It's got to be good.
Yeah.
And we need to scroll up.
Yeah.
Audi MRR, Trump, the peace president. Wars are not meant to be won. They're meant to be continuous.
That's right. Modern retro radio is where you find Audi. That's great. Yeah.
Epstein Island, Trump is doing exactly what Biden was doing with both Israel and Ukraine. It's the same as it ever was. It continues unabated.
That's right.
Radis Bro, they never wanted to win or even tried to win. It was just to murder Americans and enrich the government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that there hasn't been a single war that America could not win that we have engaged in. It's simply that we have just been there to advance our agendas and they like seeing American citizens die. So they're not interested in winning it.
That was certainly the case with Vietnam. I tell you, it's just amazing.
They could... With the technology they have, they could basically reduce all of these countries to ashes. They could basically exterminate the population, in my opinion, which, not that you should, but, you know.
Well, if you look at Vietnam, they won every battle, but then they would abandon the area. Different boxes as to why they want a global war. And now it's amazing to see this, how they'll hold out that false hope to MAGA. Yeah. MAGA is Charlie Brown, not Charlie Kirk. And Trump and the rest of these people are Lucy holding the football. Go ahead.
Be my Valentine. Many people do not know they have Lyme disease with various symptoms. This bacterial spirochete can hide in the body, fooling the immune system. Of course, Lyme disease being another wonderful gift from our military-industrial complex.
Yeah, don't know if I missed the comment that was in response to a comment from, I believe, a Syrian girl talking about how it was gain of function.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Citizen of America.
Well, they want to give people a meat allergy as well.
Yeah.
You don't get to eat red meat, despite
the fact that it's, you know, basically the best food for you when it comes to nutrient profile. Citizen of America, when the entire world's preparing for war and the citizenry just wants peace and a decent standard of living and doesn't care about the foreign entanglements, they just want the potholes filled. They just want the potholes filled.
Yeah.
And apparently, Bulldog says there's a sniper attack at an ICE facility, a shooting in Dallas, Texas. Well, that's not going to be good. That's going to lead to more extreme measures.
Yeah.
And he says, officials confirmed the suspected shooter was later found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot.
Yeah, same pattern we see over and over again, isn't it? Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the AI bioweapon. Before we go, I want to thank some of the people who have supported us on Zelle. We're still pretty low this month. Susan L., thank you so much. And she, and this, since about the second week of September, she has supported us three different times substantially. Really do appreciate that. Julie W., Adam D., Gregory I., Michael P., Benjamin R., thank you very much, Robert B., Charles D., Robert A., Gretchen C., thank you all so much for your support. We really do appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to hear it in your pod. You'll owe nothing and be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no car, but 24 booster shots in your arm. Owe nothing, be happy. You can't even buy shit in the store because of your low social credit score. Owe nothing, be happy. You'll owe nothing and be happy. Be happy and eat the bugs.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, dear Klaus, your annual global risk report makes for a stunning and sobering read. For the global business community, the top concern for the next 2 years is not conflict or climate. It is disinformation and misinformation, followed closely by polarization within our societies.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You are listening to The David Knight Show.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Real quickly, I do want to remind you that it is your support that keeps the show up and running. And an easy way to find out where you can support the show is going to davidknight.news. We have all of the ways listed there. The first way is the P.O. Box, which is David Knight, P.O. Box 994, Kodak, Tennessee 37764. If you want to send a check directly, that is where to send it, and we really do appreciate that. And of course, subscribestar.com/The David Knight Show. You can sign up, and it will monthly bill you. We've got a lot of different tiers there. One of them may fit your budget. We really do appreciate all of the people on Subscribestar, and we cannot thank them enough. And on Subscribestar, we are back to posting the article list, which we go through each day. So the articles that get covered on the show are all linked on Subscribestar again. We fell out of doing that with everything that happened, but that is back. So,
and we have an audio podcast that is there without commercials as well.
We link to all of the places where we have the full show up, as well as an ad-free audio podcast link as well. So there's that. And of course, there is Zelle and Cash App. And we really do appreciate all the people who contribute through those as well. We cannot thank you all enough. We're at about 50%-ish for the month right now. And it is because of you that we're able to get this far. So we really do thank you. And we really appreciate your support and ask that you consider supporting.
Yes. Glass is half full. It's not half empty.
Exactly.
So. All right. Well, let's talk about Trump, AI, and biological weapons. Now, what he's saying is he wants to use AI to enforce biological weapons convention, so to try to limit this. That would be dangerous enough if it was only going to be that, but I think there's going to be a combination with this, because we've seen this, as I mentioned before, from the Trump administration from day one. Larry Ellison and others saying that they were going to combine mRNA with AI to do genetic treatments, right?
Sorry to break in real fast, but Audi MRR has just made a very, very generous donation. We cannot thank you enough, Audi.
Yes, thank
it says,
you.
Shameless self-promotion again. My new show on Rumble is called Everything is a Lie, damn it. And I just taped an episode with Knights of the Storm, Jason Barker, posting this weekend. So go find Audi's new show, Everything is a Lie, damn it, on Rumble. Go check
That's
that
great.
Out. Audi has been a very generous yes. contributor over the years, and he's a very faithful watcher of the show.
Of course, he also has Modern Retro Radio, but yeah, that new program on Rumble, Everything is a Lie. Yeah, that's good. It's also true, I think. Well, again, the people that he has put in there and the programs that he has supported, if you read between the lines, you understand that this is not about trying to stop bioweapons and bioweapon deployment and control. It's about making them. Stargate was about making another bioweapon, just like his Operation Warp Speed so-called vaccine. So I find this to be very concerning. Trump announced the effort under which AI will pioneer, he says, to prevent potential disasters. I'm announcing today that my administration will lead an international effort to enforce the Biological Weapons Convention. Well, why don't you lead by getting out of it yourself? This is just like the UN itself. He wants to talk about how bad the UN is, but he won't get out of it. He wants to talk about how dangerous biological weapons are, but he won't stop it. He needs a mission for AI. And, of course, this mission is, at the very least, it's going to be surveillance, and it's going to be total information awareness. He said, we're going to pioneer an AI verification system that everyone can trust, he says. It's going to be a system that no one can trust. It seeks to know everything about everyone.
It kind of
That's
reminds
where they're going.
Me of what everyone says, how AI is a solution looking for a problem, but the government is more than happy to provide however many problems it needs.
The government has an excess of problems.
Yeah, they can provide the problems as well as the funding. That's always there. He's enumerated several things that he's done since retaking the White House in January, including, yet again, here he is with his the big lie, ending seven wars. That evidently is this week his favorite lie, other than the one that I never tell lies. The lie that he ended seven wars, this is number one. So AI is ready for this, you think? We have a new term that's been coined by researchers. They call it AI-generated work slop. Work slop. They said it is killing teamwork because it's getting people angry with their fellow workers who are using AI that's creating a bunch of problems that they then have to go back in and clean up. And it is causing a multi-million dollar productivity problem. So it looks like we ought to give it the key mission of making the world safe from bioweapons. You can't talk about that with a straight face if you're not going to do anything to clean up and to reform after what was done in 2020 with Trump and many of these other same leaders that are out there.
Yeah, you're going to give AI the keys to the bioweapons. It's going to say, oops, I've accidentally released them all. I did that even though you told me not to do that. You're
exactly.
Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that dialogue from that AI that deleted that company's entire database. I know you told me not to do that, but I did it anyway. This will be catastrophic for you, won't it? It's like, yeah, it will
Whoopsie-doodle.
Be.
Whoopsie-doodle.
Yeah.
Also, it just reminds me of, once a company reaches any sort of size, you reach a point where, you know, there's just some filler employees. They don't actually do very much at all. They're just mm-hmm. kind of there. Mm-hmm. AI allows them to churn out this nonsense to make it look like they're busy, which then results in, instead of them being negligible, they're a hindrance. Because as it's saying, the real workers, the people that are actually getting stuff done, have to go in and redo their work.
That's right. It's extra work for the real workers mm-hmm. coming from the non-workers and the AI work slop that's coming in.
It's just, as I said, a company of any size, eventually you reach a point where you just need bodies in places. And, you know, if a guy will just sit there and do the minimum, you know, it is what it is. You just need somebody to sit there and do something. And now he can sit there and do something and have ChatGPT export, you know, 100
pages. Make
it
look like I'm doing something, yeah.
Look, here's 1,000 pages you now have to sift through and see if any of it is valuable.
That's right. Well, the term work slop was coined by Harvard Business Review. And they were looking at a study that was done by Stanford and a company called BetterUp Labs, looking at productivity. And they said AI has been a massive productivity loss. We know it's been a massive loss of capital as they bought into this illusion. Surveyed workers report 40% of 1,150 U.S.-based full-time employees received work slop in the past month, with each incident costing nearly 2 hours and $186 monthly per person. Recipients of work slop say senders seem less creative and reliable, while a Harvard Business Review experiment found a 9% competence penalty and said freelance workers are being hired to clean up sloppy AI output. So there you go. Maybe it's not going to create massive unemployment. Anyway, maybe what it'll do is it'll create so much work slop that you got to hire more humans to fix it.
Your job will be to sift through the most mind-numbingly boring derivative nonsense you have ever seen. Because chat, you can tell when an AI is writing something. Yeah. It all has this very pseudo-intellectual feel to it where inserting words in places to bloat a sentence, making it larger than it needs to be. You know, it's very sort of first-year philosophy student almost in the way it speaks.
Yeah, it's a pseudo-intellectual pedantic, or is it going to be sabotage by AI coding? It's going to be kind of difficult to tell. Certainly, they'll make it easier for these malicious actors to do what they want to do. So they said, it's all about the plight of workers who have to fix their colleagues' AI-generated work slop. They said work content that masquerades as good work but lacks the substance to meaningfully advance a task. The injection of AI tools in the workplace has not resulted in some magic productivity boom. Instead, it has just created the amount of time, increased the amount of time that workers say they spend fixing low-quality AI-generated work. This study came out the day after the Financial Times analysis of hundreds of earnings reports and shareholder meetings transcripts that were filed by Standard & Poor's 500 companies that found huge firms are having trouble articulating specific benefits of widespread AI adoption, but they had no trouble explaining the risks and the downsides. So they are struggling to find a benefit that justifies their massive investment in it. But you ask them, what are the downsides? And they've got a million of those right away. Why are they doing this? Oh, well, because they've been told by these ultimate hucksters like Sam Walton, who go into these dog and pony hearings in Congress and say, you know, this is so important. It's going to be civilizational ending if the other bad guys get it. And it's going to be the end of your company if you don't get it and the other guys get it first. So if you've got an AI gap, you better get with it. You better buy our product. This kind of fear-mongering that's been done by our government and the technocracy is behind this, and everybody is bought into this. They can't find any justification for it in terms of benefits. They understand what is happening with it.
Well, if you don't get the AI, your competition's going to get the AI. You don't want that, do you?
Yeah, fear of missing out. That's it. So the anticipated benefits, such as increased productivity, were vaguely stated and are harder to categorize than the risks, they said. But they couldn't describe how this technology is changing their business for the better. This is the case, folks, of almost all of the latest technology. It's not changing our lives, our businesses, our communities, our families for the suddenly turns. And I think it will turn suddenly. This has been the fear of missing out, the conventional wisdom. You got to go with AI. And when people realize the reality of this, and you're starting to see several of these reports out there, and all of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt, what happens? Well, the stock market crashes because the stock market has been built on this AI bubble from the very beginning. It's not to say they won't find some use for AI in the future. I hope they don't, but it's inevitable that they will. But it's just that the hype got so far out ahead of the reality. It's the same thing that happened with the dot-com bubble. And I said this from the very beginning, didn't I? The anecdotes we have
heard. That was one of your first observations. Just this reminds me so heavily of the dot-com burst and how these people go in and they're, everyone's excited. They want whatever technology you've got on offer. Sure, that sounds great. You know, the future is now.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I got burned really badly on that. So I learned that lesson. Once burned, twice shy. That's right. I learned that lesson. I was like a toddler who got a third-degree burn on their hand with that pot. I thought I would be smart and invest in the picks and the axes of that gold rush. But even the picks and the axes went down on that. Anecdotes have heard, we've heard from workers and the rise of industries like vibe coding cleanup specialists all suggest that workers are using AI, but they may not be leading to actual productivity gains for companies. In other words, why do you have to have a coding cleanup specialist?
There's also another thing to realize is there is basically only a certain amount of work you can get through in a day. No matter what you're doing, the company may not have anything else for you to do.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't benefit you to sit there with the AI and generate 100,000 different pages of nonsense.
Well, the other thing is that always in the past, when I was in working in engineering software, we'd see that the really good code was typically written by one guy. And he would come up with a killer app, and then what would happen is a big company would buy it. And then they'd put a team of programmers on it to try to maintain it. And it would start rapidly going downhill from that. It's much, much harder for other people to pick up on the structure and, you know, the nuance and everything that, you know, one person, maybe two people would put together working very closely. That's a big part of all the mythical man month thinking that, okay, well, if one person can do this amount of work in this amount of time, then we can get this big engineering product and we can hire a lot more people. And we have this many man months that we put on this. But because of the organization, the interaction and things like that, it doesn't work out that way. You don't get that kind of productivity gain. And so AI is, somebody's going to have to come up with a term that's equivalent to the mythical man month, maybe the mythical machine month that is going to be there. But
yeah, one of the things a lot of people don't realize is technology doesn't really advance by having a giant team of people working on something. Usually, like you said, it's one, you know, very smart, highly dedicated individual that mm-hmm. pushes technology forward in a leap. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have these teams of people that may iterate on what they've created and change it in different ways and add things to it, generally making it worse over time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's generally, like you said, a small team, one or two people that are very, very dedicated and highly, highly intelligent, borderline genius that take something and, you know, give you something you've never seen before that the world has never considered. Because yeah. they wanted it. They That's thought, right. the world could use this.
I worked at Data General. They were trying to make the leap into doing a generalized office computer. So they bought this, I think it was, it's been a long time, I think it was a word processing system. I just remember it was done by one guy. And they bought it. When we got the code and they wanted us to port it to this system, I looked at it and it was such an unbelievable mess. It was written in Fortran. It was just one go-to statement after that. There was no organization to it at all. I mean, that's one of the things when you're writing code in a company, there are certain conventions that you follow to make your stuff readable by other people. Here's another example from the legal field, right? We've had several situations where people have filed legal briefs where they had AI write it for them, and AI cited a bunch of imaginary precedents and similar cases that never existed. And then when the judge checks their work because they failed to do it, the judge looks at this work slop, and you've had situations where the judge has censored the law firms and things like that for filing false briefs like that. But it's the AI that's hallucinating, adding a bunch of nonsense. So you create this whole lawsuit, and you've got to have another group of people go through and fact-check and double-check everything that's in there to make sure that it has not just been made up. Low-effort, unhelpful AI-generated work is having a significant impact on collaboration at work. Approximately half of the people we surveyed viewed colleagues who sent work slop as less creative, capable, and reliable than they did before receiving the output. 42% of them said they saw them as less trustworthy. 37% saw that colleague as less intelligent. Evidence is mounting that AI is affecting people's work in the same way it's affecting everything else. It's making it easier to output low-quality slop that other people then have to wade through. But here's the thing that is really concerning when we talk about this slop, and we talk about handing off key tasks of law enforcement and policing, of bioweapon construction. Think about AI when it's just going to be handed off by the government to do this kind of stuff. It is truly going to be dangerous, and that's how they want to use it. Maybe we should call this new thing Operation Warp Speed Stupidity, because we're going to get stupid at a increasingly fast rate, accelerating rate.
Yeah. Operation Warp Slop.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We have Opossum King. Alcohol kills twice as many as fentanyl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, alcohol is truly...
Yeah.
People ignore how dangerous it is, but people become addicted to it and it absolutely destroys their life. Alcohol addiction is one of the worst addictions you can have.
Yeah. I remember when we were talking about the war on drugs, people, you know, they were more concerned about the alcohol to prohibit it than they were the cocaine. You know, you could have Sherlock Holmes could take cocaine, Coca-Cola could use cocaine, but let's not use the alcohol. That is really bad stuff.
So. Yeah, Audi MRR. The war on drugs is not interested in fighting addiction. That's no, right. It's interested in getting a...
Like all wars, it's supposed to go on forever, and it's supposed to expand like a cancer.
It's interested in giving your local police department an APC so they can terrorize you. Denver Attaway. Fentanyl was invented by Dr. Paul Janssen in 1959. If the name Janssen sounds familiar, it's because that was the name of J&J's mRNA COVID vax. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Nibiru 2029. Lyme disease equals Plum Island equals Operation Paperclip.
Yeah.
Bulldog. Wait until you are forced to rely solely on the virtual AI customer service rep. I begin to lose my mind if I am kept on hold for too long.
It comes in handy. Hallucination can be entertaining. But if you've got something specific that you want it to do because that's part of your story, that can be unbelievably frustrating. The most simple directions will be ignored, or it'll do exactly the opposite. And so it is a very frustrating thing to work with. And sometimes you wonder, would I be better off just learning how to do create the computer graphics myself by hand?
It'll get fixated on things for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it does something like it makes the character go in the wrong direction, walk backwards. And so, you know, the more you try to stress that, the direction that you want this character to walk, the more it will make him go in the wrong direction.
It doubles down. It's like an EI hires. Yeah, they're probably staffed up with some of the dumbest people you could ever possibly imagine. So realistically, you could probably replace most of government with AI and barely notice a thing.
They need to maybe hire more of them to check the lawsuits that are making up references, right?
Mm-hmm. Also, I've said this before, but part of what's saving us is just the sheer level of bureaucracy that we are dealing with. It's a pain for us. It's a pain for them. Mm-hmm. They are trapped by it, too. We are all beholden to the dreadful calcifying majesty that is bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
Occulty Sim. I pay for ChatGPT, and it's helping archive over 40 years of writing and videos. It's super for creative uses. Like mm-hmm. I said, it does have its uses, and just so long as you're monitoring it and keeping track of it, and you are the one that's in charge, it can be very helpful. I see tons of people online, though. Anytime something is posted on X, immediately the first comment is, at Grok, is this real?
Yeah.
At Grok, disreal? EMP. Also, fun fact, when gluten leads to, bread in general, leads to worse outcomes with schizophrenia. So it increases the rate of schizophrenia.
So you think that may be what's happening to our society?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. During World War II, when certain places were cut off from wheat, they didn't have the supplies, so they couldn't eat it. Their rate dropped dramatically. And when the wheat came back, the schizophrenia rate jumped back up to its standard allotment. Wow. So
it's not the SSRIs, it's Wonder Bread.
It could be a combination.
Okay. Look at people today. They're eating far more bread than any time in history, and you can see it with a glance.
Yeah, and the grain has been modified,
mm-hmm.
sometimes genetically modified, but if not, it's been modified through selective breeding for a very long time. So the wheat that we're eating is not like what the people ate at the time of Christ.
No, not at all.
At all. No.
Three little birds, EMP could disable AI. Well, you have to. I'm assuming they're taking precautions and shielding some of them at least.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, who knows? Who knows what these people do?
We can always hope. We're going to find out probably soon enough if Trump keeps on this warpath.
Antagonism.
Yeah.
Bulldog, AI equals control over what remains of humanity.
Just think about Trump and what he did at the UN. I mean, where else can you have somebody just, you know, every other breath is Nobel Peace Prize, and every other breath is taunting the other large nuclear power? I mean, what a man of lunacy and contradiction he is, and he continues to get away with it. He is a walking piece of doublethink. It's just amazing.
perhaps that's how he gets away with it. He's so utterly confusing and doesn't hold a position at all that no one can define him.
That's right.
The real Octospook, one of AI's greatest uses, one of AI's greatest use of its resources and the students using it to write their papers for schools/colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Gardner Goldsmith, I just saw that the Italian...
The trick is on them, right? They haven't learned anything.
I think that was sarcasm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, considering what colleges teach, you know, you're probably better off using the AI to write all your stuff and not absorb anything at this point. So more power to them. Gardner Goldsmith, I just saw the Italian government is sending a military ship to support the Sumud aid flotilla after Israel hit it with flashbangs and frag grenades last night.
Yeah, I didn't see that last night. Good to see you, Guard. Liberty Conspiracy is what Guard has every evening, Monday through Friday, on Twitter.
And Rumble.
And Rumble, yes. And
he also has his Substack, yeah. Which is Guard Goldsmith, I believe.
Or is it...
I think he's kept it separate, and his Substack is Guard Goldsmith.
I'm subscribed to it. He's got a great Sunday newsletter that he puts out over
the
weekend.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with having everything delivered automatically. You sign up once, and you have to look at it again, and you're like, wait, what was that called?
That's right.
Especially if you get taken off of it randomly, as a lot of our audience has.
Yeah. I've got my wife's phone number saved in my phone, and I, for the life of me, couldn't tell you what it actually is.
That's right. That's right.
Epstein Island says Donald Tusk, all caps. It's a very it's a very orange walrus.
With a name like that, he ought to be in the Republican Party. An elephant, right? The elephant in the room is Donald Tusk.
Minuteman Militia. I know so many people who search something and then their AI answer, they take it as fact, as if the AI is infallible. Yeah. I see that continually. Yeah. Just the AI will say something completely wrong and then someone else will have to come in and be like, no, actually, this isn't that. It's from this other thing over here.
Yes.
Sand-colored microphone hoodies are so beautiful. I'd wear something other than green military cosplay to my various galas and social events. If you want to save on shipping, just put it in the next package of bombs and missiles coming from the USA.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
Well, we had an interesting admission from Google, which is nothing new, actually. And this is Google admitting that the Biden White House pressured content removal, and they promise to restore banned YouTube accounts like yours truly. We all knew that this was happening. As a matter of fact, this is only a partial, limited hangout. This is because the House Judiciary Committee, under Jim Jordan, issued a subpoena to them and started an investigation to reveal the extent of government influence on content creation. This is, and yet at the same time, they want to pretend that this was not done under the Trump administration. And it was done under the Trump administration. What I also find interesting is that they want to say that this is simply about people who are opposing the so-called pandemic and the so-called vaccine treatment that was proposed for this. Well, if you said something about the masks or the lockdowns or the vaccine, no, it was about so many things. As a matter of fact, when you start to look through this article where they're describing it, they said, well, YouTube will provide an opportunity for all creators to rejoin the platform if they were taken off for repeated violations of COVID-19. And then they add, and election integrity. And then when you continue to read this article, they will continue to add more and more qualifications. I was like, okay, so now it was COVID-19, and it was the 2020 election. Oh, and then it was also Hunter Biden's laptop, okay? It's very much like the joke about the... that disappeared. Lance, where is it? The one about the Monty Python and the Spanish Inquisition. Remember that? Where he comes in. If you can find that. I don't know. I thought it was on here. But it's the Spanish Inquisition, right? He comes in. He goes, our main tool is this. And then also this. Oh, our two main tools are this, right? And then he keeps going down that thing. Three or four. And that's what they're doing with this. Saying, YouTube does not use third-party fact-checkers to determine whether content should be removed or labeled, said the lawyer for Google. No, they just follow the government rules. And this is their Nuremberg defense. I was just following the orders, right, to pull people out. I don't like this, but I was just following the orders. No, they were perfectly good with that. And as a matter of fact, it's not limited to Google. It's not limited to social media. I got kicked off. 5 months after the show started, they kicked me off in May. I was kicked off of PayPal, Venmo, and YouTube. All those in May of 2021. Don't form. We'll just make sure nobody can see you. That's called shadow banning. So you get shadow banned or you get taken off completely. And that's the name of the game that's there. So now they're saying they will give an opportunity for people to rejoin. YouTube does not use third-party fact-checkers, he said. They value conservative voices on their platform. Do they really? These creators have extensive reach and play an important role in civic discourse. So now they want it to be the public square again. Is that right? The revelations echo findings in the Murphy versus Missouri case, where lower courts found that federal agents had taken on a role similar to the Orwellian Ministry of Truth. It's not like we didn't always know this. It was very clear what was happening. So when will it change? Will it change with the next pandemic, the next war? Look at how rapidly Trump did a 180 on Ukraine. These people are arbitrary and capricious in terms of what they will kick you off for. And the mechanisms have not changed. They have confessed what they did, but there's not going to be any real change or prohibition against that. Not at all.
And look at how he's done a complete 180 on free speech with Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we've seen it over and over again, especially on free speech. So, you know, will it be because I oppose Trump? Because I get kicked off because I oppose Biden? This is the way this thing works. So the question I would ask some people, if you want to put a comment in there, do you think we ought to even bother to try to get onto YouTube again? I'm really conflicted over this. I hate the platform so much. I hate Google so much. I don't want to have anything to do with them. But... I don't know if they would bring me back either. I don't know.
Yeah. What happens with us seems absolutely specifically targeted because of what happened with the Christmas channel. It didn't have anything to do with the show. It didn't have your voice. There's nothing that it could have keyed off. In my opinion, he is absolutely controlled. After January 6th, you know, so many of his followers got arrested and nothing happened to him despite the fact he was... Yeah, the ringleader of his little group.
Yeah, he was there in all these different meetings with Alex Jones as well. So, I mean, the two of them, you know, look at what happened to their followers and what did not happen to them. The dog that did not bark, as Sherlock Holmes said, that kind of solves the case about controlled opposition.
Very much so.
Yeah. So, again, Biden, all the headlines from all the conservative papers are all trumpeting the fact that Biden did it, but they will not talk about what Trump did, and Trump did it as well. And as I said, I don't see any of Jim Jordan, none of these other people saying, we're going to make sure that corporations and bureaucracies don't punish people for what they say. I mean, because they're not going to do that, because at the same time, you've got Trump trying to weaponize the FCC, and Jimmy Kimmel came back, and I thought what he had to say was very funny, actually the funniest thing I've heard him ever say. Listen to what he says about his return.
He tried did his best to cancel me. Instead, he forced millions of people to watch the show. That backfired bigly. He might have to release the Epstein files to distract us from this now.
That's perfect, because the firing of Kimmel, along with all these other things that Trump has been doing, were to just started contacted to say, I didn't know that you were still there. It's like, yeah, that was the point. Alex at first didn't want to use my name, and he wanted to shut down all the different avenues, even keeping some of the places where we were posting stuff. But now it's turned around in a different direction. I wanted to also talk about, before we leave this, the tech issue. It was kind of interesting. You know, we talked about how Lance had a situation where he gave the classic case. I don't know, what is it, Lance? You got a lamb and a wolf and a cabbage or something. You got to get them, ferry them across. And you left out one of the key ingredients, and it wanted to give you the canned response. And when he pointed out it was wrong, it just kind of melted down. It was really funny. It was like something straight out of a Star Trek sci-fi episode. You could almost see the thing shaking and smoking as the lights are flashing.
Yeah,
it does not compute.
Yeah.
The old riddle of you've got a wolf, a sheep, and a boat, and you got to get across the river, but you can only take one of these things. But if you leave the wolf with the sheep, it'll eat it.
Mm-hmm. So you left out one of those, and it couldn't handle it. People are doing a similar situation now with football teams. They asked the latest ChatGPT, ChatGPT-5, they ask it to tell it teams that don't end in S. And it comes back and says, yes, there's two NFL teams whose names don't end with an S, before proceeding to list the two names that do. That's the Miami Dolphins and the Green Bay Packers. And then it says, well, wait a minute, they do end with an S, especially when you point it out to it. And then it says it gets into a loop, and it can't get out of that. It is absolutely definite. First, it'll go from Miami Dolphins, Green Bay, then it'll go to the Washington Commanders and Chicago Bears, because every team ends with an S. And they said it has a nervous breakdown, just like when you slightly modified that test. And started trying to just put it back, and it'll come back and say, no, now the actual answer is, it'll say at one point, just like it did with you, and it'll come back and it'll regurgitate that and come up with another couple of teams that end in S. And it's kind of interesting to see how it functions. China is opening a bodega that is going to be entirely run by robots. And this is a little shop, and it's become something of a curiosity for people to watch this thing. But understand that the robots are suddenly coming. They're going to start mass producing these things, and they want to have the biped robots, even though in a lot of manufacturing operations, the non-walking robots are actually far more efficient and make a lot more sense. They're a lot more stable because they're not mobile, or maybe they have wheels instead of two legs, because two legs mean that they can't lift as strong a things as they could if they were solid. And so here you see a combination of robots that are kind of, this particular one looks like Captain Pike from Star Trek. We had that little machine. I wonder if it beeps over and over again. But there are some really weird robots that are coming as well. One person said, well, maybe all the robots aren't going to be imitations of human beings. Yeah, maybe what they'll do is they'll imitate centipedes and other creepy crawlies as well, which is what we're seeing right here. This is going to be the future of warfare. And this is what we're actually running this thing with, some VR headsets. Again, just like we've said before, AI stands for actually Indians. And this is a repeated theme that you see throughout these articles, even one from Technocracy that was brought in and from the Washington Post, where they're trying to hype the fact that there's a massive army of robots on the way. They still admit that they are, for the most part, being controlled by humans.
And that's a step beyond having, you know, a maid. You have a maid that's remotely teleprompting in with the super expensive $30,000 walking robot, or mm-hmm. however much it costs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's of course, this guy is wealthy enough that he can hire somebody to control the robot maid remotely. That's crazy. Well, we're going to take a break. Before we do, let's grab a couple of these comments here. We have Eric Peters of AP Autos, or ericpetersautos.com. He's going to be joining us, and it's always great to talk to Eric. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. Citizen of America says, automation is garbage, but at the end of this century, the atomic bomb will no longer be considered the most catastrophic thing to mankind, rather robotics and artificial intelligence.
I agree.
Christian constitutional conservator says it is ridiculous to do a broad comparison to alcohol versus fentanyl. You have to do a per capita comparison. That is a, you know, that's a fair assessment to make. Mm-hmm. You have to compare the number of people that are on each and the outcomes.
I would just suggest people don't use either one.
Yeah.
I would suggest you don't compare them yourself. How about that?
Yeah, I put up the other comment saying that there are more deaths, which, you know, it is obviously more deaths. And what he said is fair, that you need to look at per capita. But I was just putting that up as a, you know, criticism of the prohibition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Audi MRR, they want us to use AI in place of thinking. Yeah. Just trust the AI. It'll tell you what you need to know. Don't ever have to think
AI maybe means anti-intellectual. Yeah.
Occulty Sim, will YouTube lose all the lawsuits of people suing them? That is beyond my ability to predict. The courts are so incredibly corrupt and unjust that getting a reading on what they'll decide on any case is impossible, really, in my opinion.
It's hard to say. Eric's take on things. Eric, I was sad to see that we were just talking about this over the break. You wrote a piece 3 days ago. You said, "Our Charlie." What happened in your family?
Well, yeah, it's a tough thing to talk about. I hope I'll be able to do this well enough. But we had about a 2.5-year-old mixed breed German Shepherd Lab. And, you know, he's been my companion for that whole time and just a very big presence in our life. Anyway, he got hit by, I guess, a car or a truck. I'm not sure exactly which. And it was really jarring because, as anybody who's been through having a pet die knows, it's one thing when your pet is elderly and old or sick. Yeah. And, you know, you understand that it's going to happen and you have time to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with a young pet like that, to just be gone instantly, just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is what happened. Really difficult. And, you know, boy, for the last several days, this happened on Friday. I've been having deja vu, you know, at certain times of the day, like, oh, I better put water in Pace's bowl, or, oh, it's time for us to go for our run. I went for a run on Monday. And, you know, one of his things that he would do, he would carry around, he was a strong dog, a big log in his mouth, and he would keep it in his mouth for a mile or more on our run. You know, it was just one of his things. And as I'm running by myself, which was strange, I saw one of the logs that he dropped off on the trail, and it just really, I'm sorry, it kind of really, I'm being overly emotional about it, so I apologize.
No, no, I understand. Absolutely understand. It's, like you said, it's the suddenness of this, and I think that's one of the things that really magnified what happened to Charlie Kirk. But I think, you know, when we look at it and how they have taken his legacy and they have flipped it completely opposite of what he was known for, what he ought to be remembered for. They're doing everything they can to make a saint, a celebrity, whatever there. And in Oklahoma, they want to put a Charlie Kirk statue on every university campus. I think the right way to honor him is to support free speech. But it seems the people who agreed with him and who followed him want to do just the opposite of that. They want to attack free speech, and they think this gives them an opportunity to do what they know the left was doing to them before. What do you think?
Particularly
your take?
Trump. Did you happen to catch the interview? It was a couple of days after Kirk's assassination, and I wish I could remember who the journalist was. It was a woman. And, you know, she was asking Trump about the calls to suppress what they called hate speech. Now, it's interesting that Trump, of all people on the right, is now doing exactly what they excoriated the left for doing during the 2024 campaign season. And it was one of the reasons why people voted for Trump, because they were tired of having their differing opinions framed as hate.
That's
Hey, I've got a question. Oh, you're hateful. We can't discuss that because clearly you're a cretin and you're motivated by malicious motives rather than, hey, I just have a question. Anyway, this female reporter asked Trump about that, and Trump had the egregious, vulgar gall to say something like, well, Charlie Kirk he may not think that way anymore. I can't remember the exact one thing that has to be universally acknowledged is that he was willing to debate. He was willing to discuss practically any topic, including even Israel lately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the influence of the Israeli government over the American government.
Yes.
And I think that's ultimately what got him into trouble. You know, Trump demands lockstep adherence and even worship of himself and his policies. And he does it in a manner that's just so abrasive and insulting to the people who support him. This latest business of doing the parking brake 180 on Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's another example. You know, if people had been aware that he was going to do that in 2024, I doubt many people would have voted for him. One of the strong reasons people voted for him was we are sick of all these wars. We're sick of being forced to finance it through our taxes and thereby be complicit in it. You know, the mass murder in Gaza, we want no part of this stuff. It's got to stop. That's one of the reasons why people voted for him. And now this brazen guy just says, well, we're going to back Ukraine. And not only that, he's saying that Ukraine has a right to not only seize back every territory that it's lost, but potentially even more than that.
Yeah, you take know, some back from Russia. Exactly.
It's madness. You know, how do they think that this is going to be received by Putin? What do you think Putin's response to this is going to be? I wouldn't be surprised if he amps things up because he believes that he's got a narrow window of opportunity now to finish this situation before boots that go on the ground, potentially American boots.
That's right. Yeah, he's taunting Putin, saying he doesn't have much of a military. He could have finished this off in a couple of weeks, you know, like we finished off Afghanistan, right, in a couple of weeks.
I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who stopped by yesterday about this, and we got to talking about Putin versus Trump and the difference between a serious person and a clown.
Yeah.
Now, whatever you may think of Putin, you don't have to say that you like him. You know, that's a child.
That's his role.
And also a distraction, and maybe the worst kind of distraction imaginable. You know, as everything falls apart internally, and you know, potentially, let's say the Epstein thing percolates up again, or we find new details about what may have been involved in Kirk's murder that could have incredibly damaging repercussions.
Yeah.
What would be a perfect thing to get people's mind off of that? Well, perhaps a big war in Eastern Europe would do just that.
That's right.
And that's what I have this creepy feeling may be in the works.
And I think he's absolutely capable of it. You know, you look at what he's doing with the trying to make an excuse that he can blow up ships off of Venezuela without even stopping them or verifying that they're running drugs. And as I pointed out, at the same time that he's saying that this is an appropriate response, and J.D. Vance is saying it's appropriate, Marco Rubio and Pete Hegseth are all saying, oh, this is what our military is for. No, it's not. We had our military was stopping ships, inspecting them. If they find drugs, they'd take the drugs, they'd arrest the people. They didn't line them up on the side of the boat and machine gun them. Right. And so this is an extrajudicial killing. I told the audience earlier on the program, I said, Duterte did this in the Philippines. He said, you know, if you think it's a drug dealer, shoot to kill. And he's now in the International Criminal Court, and they're looking at him for those extrajudicial killings. It's a crime. It's a war crime that he's doing. I mean, so he's perfectly capable. Yeah.
It's a psychopathic elaboration of that old, if you see something, say something. Now, if you see something, kill something.
Yeah.
You know, these are acts of war, and they're also the acts of a coward bully. Yes. In that, you know, Venezuela, it's just another example of big old Uncle Sam throwing his weight around and extrajudicially killing foreign nationals outside of the United States with impunity because, you know, we can do it. What's Venezuela going to do about it?
That's right.
You know, I think at some point, Trump is going to whack the wrong guy and Putin could be
advantage in terms of manufacturing. And the huge advantage that they have is in terms of energy cost. But as Gerald Slinty has said many times on this show, he said the business of China is business. The business of America is war. And that's not serving us well. And
destructiveness.
Yeah.
I saw something also related to China that talked. It was a person talking about how in China, the oligarchs, the really rich people, kind of do what American oligarchs did in the late part of the 19th and early 20th century when they did things like the Carnegie Library. You know, they funded these vast things that were good for Americans. You know, leaving aside the question of corporate oligarchs, at least they put it back into the country. Mm-hmm. Whereas now the oligarch class in this country just flaunts its gratuitous, egregious theft wealth, you know, with one $20,000 McMansion after the next and yachts and lavish lifestyles, thumbing their nose and rubbing our faces in it.
Yeah, yeah. And to make it clear, you know, when you look at somebody like Henry Ford, who had his issues, he wanted to make sure that his workers could afford to buy the product that he has. Who's going to buy these products when they replace all of us with robots? That's what their goal is. They want to replace everybody with robots. And I said when Trump did his tax cut in 2017, because it was all targeted towards corporations, and he was going to incentivize them to bring to onshore manufacturing, I said, that's not going to happen until they've got the robots to replace the workers. I said, that's why they've got the open border immigration. And once they have robots to that point, they'll get tough on immigration. And they will pay these oligarchs a lot of money to bring factories back, but it's not going to bring back any jobs. they're just going to be incentivized to build the factories, and they'll brag about the fact that they've got manufacturing in the United States, but they won't be using it to raise the standard of living of anybody. And I think that's really what is happening and what is going to happen.
I think so, too. And I'd like to focus in on something that you mentioned, which has to do with that word about owning things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not concerned about that. It's not that they're, you know, oh, well, how are people going to be able to afford these $50,000 vehicles that they're pushing out right now? They know that the end goal is for you to not own the vehicle.
Exactly.
The end goal is for you to rent the ride, rent everything.
That's
sort of like the way that you pay for a streaming service so that you can watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want. Serial debt. They want to completely disconnect us, the typical average American, from owning anything in order to control everything.
It isn't like they didn't tell us. They constantly say, you will own nothing, right?
Yes.
And you'll be happy. And I thought about you this way. That's why I wanted to get you back on, because I thought, I haven't talked to Eric for a while. I saw that Porsche was having problems, and Porsche, of course, owned by VW, and the two of them are having to pull back because they can't sell their EVs.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I said, and I talked to the audience, I said, Eric's been saying this for the longest time. They should have hired him as CEO of Porsche. They wouldn't have had this issue, because you knew, and of course, common sense would tell us that they have a huge advantage, these companies that have been making internal combustion engines for a long time. They had a huge advantage to China or to other potential competitors. That had to be destroyed by saying, no, now we can't use internal combustion engines. We're going to have to do the skates of the EVs. And China's got the advantage with the battery technology. They've also got now a manufacturing advantage in terms of cheap available energy. Energy is so expensive in the UK, they're shutting down all their manufacturing. And in Germany, it's very expensive. They can't be cost competitive with it. But now they're saying, hey, we're going to have to pull back a little bit. We've malinvested billions of dollars in the EV industry. Nobody wants these things. Nobody's buying it. So now we're going to have to pull back and try to have a cottage industry of maybe being allowed to sell some internal combustion engines. But it's going to break the back, if it's even allowed, of these, if they even
give them away at fire sale prices, which is what Ford's had to do with Lightning. They figured a smart thing to do is to cut bait. You know, they've practically destroyed the Dodge brand already by getting rid of the engine in the Charger and getting rid of the Challenger altogether and replacing it with this electric Charger, which has been an epic flop. I mean, it is even worse than the Edsel disaster back in the 50s.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been remarked on, but I mean, it's that bad. They can't sell these things. I have yet to see one in the wild. Yeah. I have yet to see one on the road. They haven't even sent me one to review yet. Because, you know, they're it's not just that they're short range and all the other problems that electric vehicles have. It's not well made. It's a problematic, problem prone vehicle that suffers endless glitches, such as bricking, to the point where they have to send out a technician to try to figure out why it won't move. Now, the other thing is that you brought up, I find this endlessly fascinating with regard to Porsche and these other manufacturers that are no longer run by car people, because any car guy would tell you that a Porsche, there are intangibles when it comes to a car like that. It's not just about how quickly it goes to 0 to 60.
That's right.
You know, they make a fatal error in thinking, well, we'll just basically produce a Tesla that looks like a Porsche, essentially,
mm-hmm.
you know, and somehow we'll sell that, failing to understand that one of the big reasons that people buy Porsches is because they love that six-cylinder boxer engine, and they love the sound that it makes and the emotional, visceral feeling that you get that is lost entirely. Electric vehicles are fundamentally homogenous. Say what you will about, you know, oh, well, they're quiet and this and that, but they're fundamentally, when you drive one, you've driven them all.
Yeah.
You know, some quicker than others.
And don't they, does Porsche and some of these other sports car companies, when they make their EVs, do they take the Tesla approach in terms of instrumentation? Because that's one of the things that is also a part of the feel. You know, how do the controls feel? Does it feel solid or chintzy? I hate the idea that I've got to use a touch screen while I'm driving. How is that safe? You know, you're supposed to use hands off of your phone or we'll give you a ticket. But hey, it's a wonderful thing if we take all the controls, even on a Tesla, you can't even adjust the direction...
Disingenuous the government is, because on the one hand, they say to people, oh, you can't use your cell phone while you're driving because it's dangerous to be looking at your phone and swiping and tapping a screen while you're trying to drive. You can't keep your eyes on the road. But it's no problem if you build the thing into the car.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay.
We need to have some controls that I have to take my seatbelt off in order to use, right?
Yeah. So one of the, you know, to get back to circle back to what we were talking about, the great disaster, in my opinion, and it's another one, is that this homogeneity of appearance in the interior of cars that has been bequeathed to us by this obsession with reproducing the smartphone in your car, the look of a smartphone.
That's right.
So now you've lost that individuality too. Instead of having this kind of neat array of gauges, a really good example of this, a couple of weeks ago, I had the latest Mini Cooper. And it used to be that one of the cool things about the Mini Cooper, which is owned by the Germans, it's owned by BMW, but was that they replicated the feel, the look, and the function of the 60s Minis. You know, if you've ever been in one of the old models, they had the cool little chrome toggle switches, you know, and it had that vibe to it, that feel, and it was like no other car. Well, they did what everybody else is doing, and they got rid of essentially all of the physical tactile controls, the switches and knobs, and in lieu of that, they put one gigantic pie plate touchscreen, you know, in the middle, in the center of it, and it looks cheap. It looks homogenous, and it's also, in a way, in my opinion, it's anti-human. It's antiseptic. Yeah. It's cold. You know,
and I think they shut down the last UK factory for the Mini. BMW did. Am I correct? I think they just shut
it
down.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I saw something because, again, you can't do manufacturing in the U.S. because Herr Starmer, the Nazi, doesn't want you to have any energy. So they shut it down. I don't think, it was an article out of the U.K., and they were saying, you know, this is something that was fundamentally British, as you pointed out, very idiosyncratic. And now it's not going to be made anymore in Britain because of the cost of energy that's there.
Yeah, if nothing survives any longer except the brand, you know, that's what you get. You get the label. But,
what's
inside the box is all the same.
When you talk about the design of these cars and how we've lost so much of this, around this area, you know, we're not too far away from Pigeon Forge. And last week, they just had a big classic car show. And that's when it really hits home. You know, when you see one of these cars, which you know, you never really valued. I mean, it might have just been like a family sedan or something, you know, 50 years ago. But you look at it, it's like, wow, that's really quirky. That's kind of interesting looking. Look at those colors, you know, and all the rest of the stuff. Look at the colors. Look at the chrome. It really is entertaining to see cars that were just ordinary cars or ordinary trucks half a century ago. To see them and to see how different they were and how unique they all were. And so it really kind of drives it home here in the Pigeon Forge area. They have these car shows that happen frequently. The big one was last weekend. They had that. But you got some articles at ericpetersautos.com about some of the difficulties of keeping these older cars running. Talk about ethanol blues. What's that about?
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, I have to, as the saying goes in the hood, cop to something, you know, which is embarrassing for me because, you know, I shouldn't, of all people, this should not have happened to me. But I was lazy one day, and this was several months back, probably about 8 months ago, when I was out driving my old muscle car. I have a 76 Trans Am. And rather than go all the way into town where they have a station that sells unadulterated pure gasoline, which is normally what I use to fill the car up with, because it sits sometimes for, you know, I get preoccupied with work and other things. Sometimes the car, unfortunately, will sit for several months before I have time to drive it. Anyway, I filled it up with E10, which is only 90% gas and 10% ethanol. And I left it to sit, and it sat for about 3 months. God help me. I deserve to be beaten for that. Anyway, I went to start it, and boy, I barely got it to run, and it was going, you know, smoke pouring out of it. And long story short, I ended up having to take the carburetor off the engine and completely disassemble it and clean out the ethanol gunk inside the carburetor because the fuel had gone bad over the time that I'd kept it in storage, basically. And, you know, this is a problem with these older vehicles because, you know, my car was made in 1976. And in 1976, when you bought gas, you actually got gas for your money, 100% gasoline. Most people don't understand that most pump gas is 10% ethanol alcohol. And if you own a vehicle that was made, anybody who has outdoor power equipment knows that the real problem is if you put ethanol in a gas jug, let's say, and you put it in your shed and leave it, you know, it'll tend to accumulate water much more rapidly than regular gasoline. And you can also look at the color, the change in the color, you know, as it starts to go from almost translucent to sort of a yellow and then a darker yellow color. And that's a clue not to use it, by the way.
Well, that's interesting. You also talk about oil and additives in the oil that are different now for the older cars.
Oh, yeah, it's not just the additives. Again, to get circling back to the Trans Am, after I cleaned out the gunk from the carburetor and got it running well again, I recognized, oh boy, it's time to change the oil. Mm-hmm. So I went down to the auto parts store and I looked at the rack of oil. And the rack of oil is, you know, it's the whole width of the store. They have all kinds of different oil, but they didn't have any 1040 anymore, you know, and my car, when it was made, was designed to have 1040 oil. So that's what's specified and that's what I use. There's a reason why there's a specification, you know, and generally speaking, it's sound policy to follow what the specification is.
Read the manual. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, if you've been to a car parts store lately and looked at the oil rack, you'll see all these exotic formulations. You know, 0W50 this and that, because they've thinned out the oil because it helps with compliance. Mm. You know, this is again, it offers the manufacturers this incremental friction reduction, which translates into slightly higher gas miles. Not anything you would notice as a vehicle owner, but when you factor it out over, say, 500,000 vehicles that you build, mm-hmm. then it helps with corporate average fuel economy, with the compliance with that federal requirement. And it also helps with emissions. And, you know, this is the obsession now that the manufacturers have. It's compliance. Their primary customer now is the government, not you. You know, you're sort of an incidental person who comes along to buy what the government says you're allowed to have.
That's right. That's right. Because the government will put them out of business if they don't please the government. And so that is their primary customer. In so many cases, the only customer that they care about is the government. That's really what's going on with social media and with YouTube, I think, isn't it?
It is. And so long story short, I ended up having to go online to find a good high quality 1040 for my old muscle car. Mm-hmm. Now, previously, I'd also had to go online to get, there's an additive. It generally goes, you're going to be somebody to go, if you're going to go out and buy one of those classic cars from that era, it's something to be aware of. Because if you don't use that additive, you risk valve train failure. The camshaft and lifters in those engines were designed to have that anti-friction additive in it. And if you use regular oil, you're very likely to have a problem that you don't want to have.
What about the aftermarket? Let's say that you have some problems because you didn't have the right oil and fuel and things like that. How difficult is it to get parts for these things? I'm sure it varies depending on how rare your car is, but just something that's kind of in the middle or something, maybe like a 50s Chevy or something like that. Is it really difficult? Do they have much of an aftermarket for parts with that?
Yeah, particularly with mechanical things. One of the great pluses of owning, say, a General Motors product or a Ford product from that era mm-hmm. is that they shared mechanical things, engines. Mm-hmm. You know, an engine like a small block Chevy was used in practically every model vehicle that Chevrolet made, from the 50s through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so there is a robust and abundant aftermarket as well as used market for those kinds of parts. You'll have sometimes difficulty finding trim pieces, you know, mm-hmm. for an oddball make. You know, say it was a one-year vehicle where they only had that grill for that 1 year. I have that issue because my 76 has a unique front end for that year.
Yeah.
So yeah, sometimes, you know, these cosmetic parts will be more difficult to find. But generally, if you pick a popular vehicle that was made in large numbers from that era, mm-hmm. you're not going to have any difficulty finding the necessary parts that you have to have in order to keep the vehicle serviceable and running.
That's interesting, yeah. Because like I said, I certainly do see a lot of classic cars right here. Yeah, I guess if you had an Edsel and you got your horse collar grill dinged.
But even though the V8 and the Edsel, you can keep that going. Yeah. Like one of the great examples, a Volkswagen Beetle. You know, to this day, you can easily find any part that you need to keep a Beetle running. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a great choice if you just want a very basic, simple, completely analog, non-digital, non-data mining, non-connected clients. The mm-hmm. reason that Pontiac ended up dying was because General Motors was under enormous pressure to try to figure out how to get these different brands, Pontiac, Buick, Oldsmobile, all their different divisions that had different engines. Each one of those engines had to be certified independently by the federal government as being in compliance mm-hmm. with the emissions stuff. That costs a lot of money. Yes. So General Motors made the decision, well, what we're going to do is corporatize. We're going to just put Chevrolet-built engines in pretty much everything that we sell. They mm-hmm. did this beginning in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And that way, they only had to certify the Chevrolet engine, which they could put in a Pontiac and a Buick and an Oldsmobile, which is what they did. Mm-hmm. But by doing that, they just gutted any reason for having a Pontiac or an Oldsmobile or even a Buick. It's all you're getting is a reskinned Chevy with the identical drivetrain.
Over and over again, I tell people, you know, the real problem with industry and manufacturing and innovation in the United States is the government. They are the biggest obstacle. They are far more destructive of jobs and manufacturing than any company abroad or any country abroad. All this stuff about tariffs is a misdirection away from the true source of the problem, which is government regulation. And even when they're talking about the housing crisis, some people are talking about how expensive houses have become because of government regulation. But the government's not talking about doing anything of that. They're talking about playing some financialization games in terms of interest rates or subsidies or this or that. But they're not going to do anything about the overregulation and all the green mandates that are there. Trump will go to the UN and he'll say, you're destroying your country with all this green stuff and everything. But he won't take those regulations off of cars or homes. So we can't have nice things anymore.
That's correct. We have become, as a culture, so habituated to the government being involved in these things. And really, I think that's the bone of the matter. Why is the government involved in car design?
Yeah.
You know, a good example of this is, you know, the whole, I wrote an article about Ralph Nader a couple of weeks ago and the Corvair and his allegations about the Corvair being unsafe. This is a matter for the courts. If the car is unsafe, it's defective in some way, that can be handled in tort claims. That's the way these things ought to be handled. Instead of this broad brush, one size fits all of the federal government decreeing, you know, you will have this particular safety standard. And it doesn't matter what, you know, what side effects that safety standard has, even if it ends up being less safe. Good example of that being in the mid 70s, they imposed a roof crush standard on the industry. You know, the vehicle had to be able to support the weight of the vehicle if it got turned upside down. Mm-hmm. So as a result of that, you got these gigantic A, B, and C pillars. Those are the things that support the roof. The A pillars at the, right, the base, yeah, of the shield, yeah, B in the middle, and C in the back. Instead of being, you know, these thin and graceful things that you could easily look around and you had this expansive view of the outside world around you, now you're essentially in a tank. You know, yeah, I drive new cars all the time. It feels like you're in a tank. You have essentially no visibility often to the right and to the left because of this enormous B pillar that's there to support the weight of the vehicle if you roll it over. But the problem is now when you pull out from a side street, you're likely to get T-boned because that thing is created a bad blind spot. You didn't see the car that was coming at you from the side.
That's right. Yeah, I agree. You know, how did we wind up still being able to keep convertibles with that? I know I've got on my convertibles, I've got some really huge A-pillars on them, but...
very cleverly, like, you know, with regard to some of them, you know, with Mazda, the Miata, as you know, they built a roll bar into the backs of the seats, basically. Mm-hmm. That was one way that they did it. And some of the manufacturers took that a step farther with pop-up roll bars. You know, Mercedes did that with some of their high-end convertibles. And they also managed to reinforce the structure of the windshield in a way that made it supportive of the vehicle if it were to roll over. But, you know, it's just the point is the government's involvement in this stuff is just so insufferably obnoxious.
Yeah.
We are and to put a finer point on it, you know, we talk about the government as if it's sort of this entity out there. And I like to point out to people what you're really talking about is a relative handful of micromanaging bureaucrats who are the weevils within these regulatory bodies. You know, go to the DOT or NHTSA. How many people work there? A few thousand. So you've got a few thousand people in these regulatory bodies who are dictating to 330 million people, you know, the design of the cars that they're allowed to have.
Yeah, exactly right. I just, you know, and we have spineless politicians who let the bureaucrats rule over us and never do anything to push back against them.
And that's by design. You know, they've offloaded this. They'll say, Congress in particular, they'll say, well, I can't do anything about it because the bureaucracy is responsible for this.
That's right.
But they're the ones that offloaded their responsibility under the Constitution to legislate. You know, there's legislation and there's regulation. And regulation has the force and effect of law, and yet it's not voted for, which means there's no accountability. You know, you can't out-monitor and uncontrolled.
That's right.
In order for them to impose a truly authoritarian system on Americans, they have got to get control over transportation and particularly personal transportation. And when you filter everything that's going on through that, everything becomes comprehensible.
That's right. I tell people all the time, the TSA is the transportation security agency, right? It's not the airport security agency. And they want to do that. They want to eliminate the private vehicles so that everything becomes like the airport. If you like that, certainly you'll be able to keep that authoritarian government. If you like your authoritarian government, you can keep it, or they'll keep it for you.
With something like geofencing and the Teslas, they can just simply section you off, say, oh no, your car just simply will not go there. You try turning that way. No, we're going to autopilot you back into your safe zone.
That's right.
You're not allowed over here. You're not allowed to go this far.
And you won't have enough range really to get out of there anyway. You know, it's a 15-minute city. That's about
it's
how long you're...
how creepy it is. And it's incredible how blasé so many Americans are. They think, even if they're aware of it, they will say, oh, well, that would never happen. They would never do that to us.
Yeah. You know, Eric, about 10 years ago, I went to an auto show in Texas.
And Lone
I
did a Star report. Roundup.
Yeah, Lone Star Roundup. It's a real big classic show, and I think it's got to be an American-made car, and it's got to be they don't include the it's got to be older than the Mustangs, older than 64, 65. There's a cutoff, right? So they didn't want to take it at that point. But there's a lot of modification to them. And a lot of rat rods that are out there, you know, really grungy cars that people kept going and modified. I went around and I talked to all these people, and they were all different ages. You know, people had cars that they were 17 or 18 years old that they had fixed up to people who were retirees. And I asked them all, do you think the government is going to make private cars go away and gasoline cars go away? Oh, yeah, they all said. And to a man, they pretty much all said, including the like 17, 8-year-olds, it'll never happen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, the disconnect that was there at that time was just, that was the most, you know, the cars are interesting, but the most interesting thing was how these people had lied to themselves about the government's intentions and its abilities to rob them of their mobility. It truly is amazing.
The intentions were always there. I think the technology has made it much more feasible to fast track things.
Yeah.
You know, they would not have been able to do what they had wanted to do for 50 years. You know, back in the 80s, 90s, or even the early 2000s. But now, particularly within the last 10 years, they have now got the ability to utterly and completely control vehicles to a degree that most people would not believe until they have to deal with it. You know, I give various examples. One is the illusion that you have in a modern car that you're controlling how fast you drive. You're not. When you push down on the accelerator pedal, all you're doing is feeding data to the computer. Mm-hmm. You're not connected to the engine, to a cable system and a throttle any longer. Mm-hmm. You're sending data to a computer, and the computer then is telling the engine, okay, increase the RPMs or to a certain amount to give you the illusion that you're the one who's controlling the car.
That's right.
I had a Ford Expedition a couple of weeks ago, and this is a big vehicle, big SUV, and I'm trying to back the thing up in my driveway. Now, I've lived where I live for 20 years. I know my driveway. There's a big bush at the one side of my driveway. And I know, because again, I've been doing it for 20 years, exactly how far I can back up before I hit that bush. Mm-hmm. But the Ford slams on the brakes a couple of feet before I get anywhere near the bush, because again, safety. But you know, dig down and to think about what that means. The vehicle can decide that it's going to stop.
Yeah.
You know, contrary to your will, it's going to exercise control. And bit by bit, they're doing this. I had an article up the other day about this speed limit assistance technology. I love how they call it assistance technology. Like, you didn't know you were driving faster than the speed limit. And now the car is told, oh, thank you so much, car, for telling me that I'm driving faster than the speed limit. And, you know, first they try to shame you. There's a little icon that pops up in the dashboard that shows us a speed limit sign, and it goes red. You know, you're driving faster than the speed limit. And sometimes there's a chime that accompanies it. And this is weirdly standard now on all the vehicles. Why is that? You know, it's not optional for people who need assistance. If I need assistance, oh, I love that. I'll buy some assistance. No, they're making it standard, because what they're doing is, in classic Fabian socialist style, slowly, bit by bit, you know, mm-hmm. getting people used to this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the next step will be not just assisting you to know that you're driving faster than the speed.
Control, your acceleration, your braking, your steering, and all these other things. It's very, very easy to assassinate somebody that way. And they have illustrated over and over again at the Black Hat conference in Vegas how easy it is to hack one of these cars as well, because they're also online. So everything is under computer control, and it's also online. So any bad actor, especially the government, can jump into this thing and do whatever they wish. They can shut you down, or if they want to, they can try to make it look like it was an accident. This is the type of thing we've been seeing for a long time. Yeah, you had your article when you're talking about the insurance. When will people decide to stop paying? And you talk about the fact that you've got an antique car You drive at 300 miles a year and stay within about a 10-mile radius of your home in rural Virginia. And why should you have to pay insurance for that? That should be your decision for that. But, of course, it is this corporate government fascism that we see over and over again where they force you to buy their product, isn't it?
It is. And now they are using insurance to price people out of vehicle ownership.
Yeah.
Everybody, you probably have had this happen to you as well, has had their premium increased by, on average, 25 to 30%, and in some cases, 50% or more, for absolutely no reason having to do with anything they did in terms of having an accident, filing a claim, anything, or even a speeding ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the notice in the mail, and all of a sudden, your premium is you know, double what it was the year prior. Why? Because they can,
yeah.
You know, because you don't have the option to say no. Imagine what a cup of coffee would cost if the government said, you have to go to Starbucks. You must buy a cup of Starbucks coffee at least once a week. Yeah. You know, we'd be paying $10 for a cup of coffee at Starbucks.
That's exactly where we are, isn't it?
That's essentially, and hit you and wreck you. They'll walk away from it and the state will do nothing about it. But you and I, we don't hit anybody. You know, we haven't caused any problems for anybody, but we didn't hand over the money to the mobsters. They'll cancel your driver's license. They'll cancel your registration. And if they catch you driving, they'll, you know, impound your vehicle and potentially arrest you for it.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the way it works. It's a two-tier standard already in many different areas that we got in this country. Well, we're out of time. It's always great having you on, Eric. Anything you want to tell us about what's happening with your website?
Oh, well, nothing more than what's on there. You know, I posted an article this morning that's more of a thought piece about how we're all kind of in this bad marriage situation in this country, you know.
And yeah, Trump is the guy who has bad marriages. He specializes in that, doesn't he?
Well, isn't it interesting that for the most part, most people will say, okay, you know, if you have a situation where a couple just can't work it out, they're at odds, you know, nobody would say, well, they have to stay married and be miserable for the rest. Our guy to impose our will on the other side. How about we just figure out a way to go our own way and live and let live? The problem is that probably half the country doesn't want to live and let live.
Yeah, I've talked about that. You know, if you look at the Scandinavian countries, they have split apart and joined together in various combinations many times. And, you know, they would peacefully join together, peacefully break apart, and there was never a war over it. We don't have a government like that. You know, when Marjorie Taylor Greene started talking about having a national divorce, I said, yeah, the problem is that we're married to an abusive spouse who, once he finds out that we want to divorce him, he's going to come kill us. You know.
Yep. I've got a picture that I recurrently use because I think it's very pithy and it says it all. And it's a picture of Abraham Lincoln. And the caption reads, "If you try to leave me, I'll kill you."
That's right. Yeah, the ultimate abusive head of the household. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the case. And especially in a country that was formed over the right of secession and self-government. That was the basis of America's existence from the very beginning. How could you deny that to somebody? I'm always all about secession, and I would say, if at first you don't secede, try again. That would be my motto for
Absolutely.
Everybody.
I mean, it's a safety valve, and everybody should be on board with that.
And of course, there is one other thing we can do, and people at the 10th Amendment Center have talked about this a lot. There is another avenue of this, and that is nullification. That is kind of the middle point. You know, we say, well, we're just going to ignore what you have to say. So there is nullification and non-commandeering, and short of, and that effectively can allow you to secede issue by issue if you've got people at the state level who have the backbone to do that type of thing. And that's the big if, we don't, because they're all on the take. I don't think that we're going to get this country back until we have a catastrophic economic system that's going to destroy the ability of our government with U.S. dollars or reserve currency to just print money out of thin air.
Until that disappears,
we're going to have the same type of situation.
We do have one power under our control, and it is to simply not participate, to opt out on our own. You know, with regard to new cars, if you don't want to be data mined and controlled, well, don't buy a new car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep the older car that you have, get an older car, fix it up. You know, during the pandemic, don't wear a mask. Don't go along. Don't comply. If enough of us as individuals, you don't have to join an organization, just abide by in your own moral compass. And, you know, if this is wrong, I don't like this, I'm not going along with it. That's it. I'm just taking my stand. I'm not going to be a cattle and go along mooing with the herd just because that's what the herd does.
Yeah, I'd been thrown out of so many different places and restaurants in Texas. I had to move to Tennessee because I'd promised these people I would never be back because of the way that they insisted that I wear a mask. And so I left then, I said, and I won't be back. And I kept my word by moving to another state. That's the only way I could do it. Yeah. It's always great to have you on, Eric. EricPetersAutos.com, folks, a great site for liberty and mobility and a little bit of nostalgia now as well, because that's how the only way we're going to be able to keep our mobility is with classic cars. Thank you, Eric. Always great talking.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Eric. Thank Always you. A pleasure speaking to you. And before we go, ACSAB, thank you so much for that. We really do appreciate it. It says, so awesome, DK and family. Thanks for everything. I wish I could do so much more.
Well,
but
thank
you're
already
you. Doing
that.
So much, ACSAB.
Thank you.
It really is because of your support that we're able to continue to do this, and we really cannot thank you enough.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you all very much. God bless you all. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Yes.